Blog Talk Radio.
Long ago, seven Dragon Balls were forged and scattered over the face of the planet. Once united, the Eternal Dragon will be called forth to grant the Discoverer.
Keep away from the fire, burn the desire. Yo, we got that. And I can do bad all by myself. Do me a favor, don't be concerned about my wealth. If you're one of my peeps, you're gonna know that. But if I ain't feeling you, player, my face is gonna show that. So keep your eyes off my pockets, don't be surprised if I cock it. Can't out slick a can of oil, you never spoil my profit. See how I'm flipping this here? Things are different this year. Ain't got no time to listen to niggas that be tripping this year. Cause and effect, I always get applause and respect. When I rhyme, universal laws, truth and righteousness connect.
Let you live rent free inside my brain. Keep your feet.
I've been telling you that there's war out here, and I've been telling you that there's more out here. So stop limiting your thoughts, stop reconstructing your plots. It's more than luck, it's an art. No more ducking from naught. Haters stay at a distance, haters keep away from my fam. Haters stay in my business, haters still playing this jam. Mad wisdom, reflect the light of this man. Some jealous rappers tried to pick a fight with this man, but despite all the nonsense and false pretense, I bombed this. Peace to those I get along with, my real niggas I'm strong with. And never get me twisted with no whack shit. And all that foolishness you was kicking, I know you wanna take it back, kid.
Keep your feet out my shoes, feel like you can pay my dues. Keep my comb out your hair, let you buy red lipstick in there. Keep my name out your mouth, when you got some work talking about. Keep your hands in your belt, cause I belong to someone else. Keep your feet out my shoes, feel like me done pay my dues.
Peace, peace. Once again, you back with Dr. Aleem Bey. Tonight's show is going to be fire, fire, fire. We got Brother Metaphysician Mike Pratt on. Brother Mike, are you here?
Yeah, what's going on, Aleem?
All right, all right. We ready for you to get into the topic of subjects of the cartoons and metaphysically decoding them, in particular one cartoon. I know we all was inspired in a sense, you know, as far as you know, learning the science of Qigong, pranic healing, Reiki, all this information.
You know, yeah.
A cartoon in particular was, of course, Dragon Ball, you know, of course, and the spinoffs from that, you know, Dragon Ball GT, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Kai, all of them.
That was all my shit, man.
That's what I grew up on.
I mean, you know, I would watch that every day coming home from school. Did you grow up on those particular, or were you more, because I know you were born, what, the 60s, right?
Yeah, well, I was born in 69, yeah, so almost in the 70s, but yeah, really, I mean, I was watching them too, you know, because I was also learning Qigong at the time, you know, in the early 90s, so, I mean, all those cartoons were, you know, basically dealing with the same thing I was learning, so I was watching them and see if there was any metaphysics, you know, in which that was dropped. You know, and of course, and that's why we're here tonight, in order to get on that particular topic of, you know, the metaphysics, the esoteric teachings in which that was dropped in these particular cartoons, you know, in particular Dragon Ball. I mean, so what's your science on the symbolism behind the seven, you know, balls in which they was always looking for, and once they found all seven, they was able to get, you know, granted a wish, you know, or particular wishes, you know, so, you know, break that down for us.
Well, I actually wanted to tell you the funny thing is because I actually, what I'm going to say on this show tonight, I wanted to say that since the first time I talked to you on the phone.
All right.
But basically, yeah, so, I mean, you have the Namekians. The Namekians, those are those green beings that you see from planet Namek.
Right.
They have, like, little antennas on their head. They created the Dragon Balls, right? So you have seven different Dragon Balls. You gather them together in Shenron, which Shenron, we, of course, know in Japan, Shen is, like, dragon or dragon spirit or dragon god. And so basically that is symbolic to, that's symbolic to the chakras. And if you know from...
And the Kundalini.
And the Kundalini rising, that's Shenron. Because when you, at least when it comes to the sexual magic or anything like that, you know, you put whatever you want to manifest, you know, basically, you know, that's your wish. Or Aladdin with the genie or, you know, whatever. Same type of thing. Of course, they're not going to, I mean, it's a kiss show. They're not going to be talking about sexual magic, but they give you a clue, you know, this is the way it's done.
Right, and what are some of the clues in which that you was able to pick up from it, you know, from a child and now looking back at it, you know, as a and as an adult, you know, what was it, you know, that even interested you in from Dragon Ball?
Well, it plays a lot, you know, on the mythologies of I mean, a lot of movies. I mean, it can go back to Egyptian mythology. It can go to Greek. I mean, Goku is pretty much like a child. You know what I'm saying? And he had a father named Bardock, or I think Bardock-ku. That's either in Japanese or whatever. And his father died by Frieza, right? So Frieza let off this huge, you know, energy blast, and that killed Bardock. And Goku comes down here on a spaceship, and, you know what I'm saying, that his grandfather, Gohan, finds him, you know, in this pod. I mean, he accidentally ends up killing his grandfather because he turns into Uzaru. And Uzaru, you know, that's the Monkey King. Especially in Asia, there's a Monkey King. But also in India, I think, what's that, Hanuman?
Right, Hanuman.
Hanuman. And
right,
that,
even within ancient Egypt, they had Hanuman as the symbol of the baboon for Tahuti. So that's where it originated from, definitely. And it symbolizes wisdom.
There you go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, because it's always on a full moon, you know, when he turns into that.
Right,
and
the symbol of Booty was the moon.
Was the moon. He was the moon guy. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say, because, I mean, the interesting thing is that he goes, he doesn't know it necessarily, but he goes to kill, his brother. Remember his brother Raditz?
Right.
So as Raditz comes to the planet, now this is beyond Dragon Ball, this is Dragon Ball Z. This is after, like, fighting Piccolo and everything, and basically, but his brother comes and is saying, like, you know what I'm saying, you're a Saiyan, you're supposed to be, why do you show love to these human beings? You know, you're a Saiyan, you're supposed to be blowing up planets and shit like that, you know? And, you know, I mean, Goku loved Earth, and he loved, you know, human beings, and he was not doing that. But as you can see, that what that reminds me is Horace and Set, or the story of the two brothers.
That's right.
And then, of course, you know, he has to get Piccolo, and Piccolo does, you know, that special being canon, kills Goku and Raditz, and then after you go past that episode, you know, you see Goku in what they call the other world, and he has to,
right, well,
he has to run.
Right, when we get into that, I mean, the whole science is, that is Egyptian mythology. I mean, that is also who, in his awakened form, is Heru, who ends up fighting his brother, you know, or uncle in that certain case as Set, you know, because the battle originally was between Osar and Set, or Osiris and Soot, you know. However, Heru picked it up as being the incarnation of Osar, and, you know, that battle waged until Tahuti, you know, who acted as the mediator, you know, between the two, ended up having to unify them, you know. And, you know, and the way the battle was won was because the eye of Heru was returned to him, you know, hence, like, you know, symbolic to the Dragon Balls, actually. And when that eyeball was returned, you know, he was able to transform himself into the Uraeus, or what is known as Washashat. And as the Washashat, he was able to defeat and cause Set to merge, you know, the lower nature into the higher nature, or the lower self into the higher self. So when we're looking at that story, you know, we know that Osar, who was the lord of the conscious world and of, you know, when he was quote-unquote alive, but as he was killed by Set, he became the lord of the underworld. You know what I'm saying? Same as Goku, you know, did as he was, like, the supreme being here on Earth until he was taken out by an alien force, you know, in a sense, and you know, and he became the Lord of the you know, of heaven too. So it's symbolic to becoming the Lord of heaven and earth. So that is very heavy within the mythologies, you know, whether it's coming from ancient Egypt or which is, you know, actually originated as, you know, the Kushite, you know, traditions, you know, and you know, and then of course, as it comes, you know, with even within the Greek, the Roman tales, and so forth and so on, it definitely has, you know, has spanned the times.
Yeah, exactly, and I'm just surprised that, I mean, he's Japanese, the writer of Akira Toriyama. I'm just surprised that he put that much in there.
I mean, that's what made
that show so great.
Definitely. Definitely, it was definitely one of the greatest cartoons of all times, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you had a cartoon in which that adults was watching and talking about. You know, I mean that is definitely something. You know, for you to have adults talking about cartoons. You know, and that was everywhere. That was all over the country. You know, so that was definitely very powerful. And like I said, that was one of the instrumental forces in which that I think a lot of people began to start learning and practicing Qigong and Tai Chi, you know, and different energy modalities. You know, was because that influence.
Because I was trying to do that when I was younger. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was trying to make energy balls. And then once I actually felt my own energy for the first time, and I mean it wasn't when I actually felt, you know, like an orb in between my hands, then I was like, wow, okay.
Right, and what was you doing in order to produce that? What did you do?
Well, at first, what I would do is, you know, because I mean in Dragon Ball they're always getting energy, they're always getting angry to bring out their energy.
Right.
You know, in Qigong, you don't necessarily have to do that. You want to be calm. But what I was doing is just basically focusing on the energy in between my palms. Like Gohan tells Videl, I don't know if you've seen that, when Gohan's trying to train Videl, he basically says the same thing that you would do in Qigong. You focus on your, you know, navel center, and you kind of just bring it out. You know, just like that.
Right, and what people fail to realize is that that is one of the storage places for this chi or ki or prana, you know, energy, you know, which is the universal life force energy, and what you're doing is bringing the universe down or the cosmic energy down or the heavenly forces down into you and making it earthly force, you know. So that's how you are merging heaven and earth, is by bringing those energies into yourself. And as people who have melanin, I mean, this is the thing in which that we definitely need to be doing, because that's why we was gifted with it, you know. And so as you bring it down into your navel chakra, that is one of the storage places. There's three in particular. You know, you have your navel, you have your heart, and you have your third eye. Those are the three places in which that you place this energy or prana or chi or ki energy. And when you place it in your navel, it gives you the extension of your life force. In other words, it can make you live longer. You add years to your life. It can even, in some, of course, when you study the Taoist, you know, teachings, there's eight immortals. So the number eight become prevalent, and it's no coincidence that energy is tapping into the eight cells of division, which is called the eight blastula pores, in which that is the remnants of what formed your physical body, you know, into, you know, manifestation, you know, from amoeba, you know, embryo / into a fetus, and now into, you know, a baby, or, you know, going through puberty and now an adult. You know, it came from those eight particular blastula pores, you know, so hence, you know, we see the correlation with that, you know, and even in ancient Kemet, we had the eight, you know, deities, you know, from the, called the Akhenids, you know, or Agadad, you know, in which that, you know, stemming from Atum, you had Shu, Tefnut, Geb, Nut, Osar, Oset, Nebhet, and Set, you know, so those eight, symbolic to those eight divine cells of mitosis, in which they form Atum or Adam into physical existence. I just wanted to get that in there.
No doubt. And if you know in Dragon Ball, well, I mean, you already know, most people know, Tien has a third eye.
Right.
Well, what move does he do? He puts his hands in front of his
third
face
eye.
Or his third eye. Yeah. Does the solar flare.
Mm.
Now, that's interesting because, I mean, we've been talking about, you know, solar flares for so long, but not just that. I mean, telling you the keys, you know, where you can use the solar flare, you know, you can store it in your upper Dantian.
Right. That's Christians refer to that as the upper room. So, you know, they love talking about the upper room. Where they going to go to the upper room? And I'm like, you just don't know. That is the upper room. The third eye is the upper room. And like you said, that's one of the definitely places in which that you store the solar flare energy at, you know, as it comes through the hair follicles and comes down into the skull and, you know, meets with the pineal gland, which is the master gland of the endocrine gland system of the whole body, actually. And that is our, you know, driving force is the pineal gland. That's the eye in which that we actually use, in which that, you know, give us direction, you know, and biofeedback and, you know, our sleep patterns and all of these things are from, you know, the pineal gland and give us access to communication with the ancestors. That's how you remember they was able to hear Goku, you know, when he was in heaven on Earth. Krillin and all of them was able to hear him, you know, mentally, telepathically. So they showed you even in their telecommunications between the ancestral forces and, you know, between man.
Yep, and they could sense power levels.
Mm-hmm.
And that has nothing to do with who has bigger biceps. I mean, that's about your energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's nice to have big biceps, but I mean, it's really talking about your aura, your energy, and that's what they pick up on each other's energy.
Yeah, and that's no coincidence that within Pranic Healing, we have three different techniques, the empty retention, the 7171, and the 6363 breath, pranic breathing or breath technique, in which that expands your auric field from 3 feet to 15 feet outside the body. Some masters has even mastered the technique to extending their auric field a mile.
So, you know, that what that's saying is, if you want to get with the Dragon Ball Z, you need to be doing your 6363.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
You need to be doing that.
Right.
I was going to get into a little bit more of the Dragon Ball before we switch over to the, I got a whole lot. We got about an hour, right?
Yeah. We got 40 minutes. So hit it up. Go.
All right. So, you know, I mean, I was reading the internet is a great resource, but basically what I was saying is the Saiyans, you know what I'm saying, the Saiyans lived, basically, they were an ancient, so-called ancient civilization that got wiped out. And later they became, you know, you see all the Saiyans, you know, they all have a tail, you know, symbolizing that either that baboon, which is Tahuti, or if they were, and we're not talking about, like, going back to apes. This is stuff you got to decode. You know what I'm saying? But basically, you know, this civilization was wiped out, and that's supposedly what made them, I mean, they were aggressive from the start, but this civilization got wiped out. And then later, you know, they came back as Saiyans, and I mean, they destroyed planets and all types of things like that. But when Goku came, I mean, Goku was a Saiyan, but he came in a pod, and he learned from the ways of human, and he was trained by his grandfather. You see what I'm saying? And, I mean, you just have so much things with that show. I mean, Krillin, Krillin is like a, you know, that's like a monk. I mean, if you see from the very beginning of Dragon Ball, right?
Yep.
So Krillin is like a monk. They learn from Master Roshi, who is like this hermit that lives on an island. And what he say is, like, it took me like 50 or something years to master the Kamehameha wave. But, I mean, what it's all breaking down in there is, you know, you take, you know, I mean, people will say, you know, why are you going to the Dragon Ball on this? Why are you going to little kids shows? They knew that little kids would pick up on it subconsciously, and adults would just be like, there's no point in watching this.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because they knew that they put, as far as the 90s shows, the stuff that I grew up on, they put heavy metaphysics into all of those shows because they knew that the kids were the only ones that were going to pick up on it. And, I mean, their kundalini was crazy. You know, when you were little, you just had so much energy and you were, you know, running all over the place.
Yep.
People said your parents would be like, you know, sit down.
That's right.
You know, just calm down.
That's right. Be like my grandma, sit your ass down somewhere.
Yeah, sit your ass down. You know? Yeah. But, I mean, when I was little, you know, I mean, when we'd be on the playground, I mean, we'd be, I mean, this kid was like a, we would be throwing energy blasts at each other. We'd be training each other. I mean, we'd be hitting and kicking each other. We were, of course, just playing around. I mean, we weren't intentionally trying to hurt each other. But, I mean, just the power that it had. I mean, we would be in a different dimension. You know what I mean? Just having these battles.
That's right.
And we didn't care about it. It's because I feel that was part of the pineal gland that made it like that.
Right.
I feel because it probably wasn't, you know, I mean, because you weren't so caught up in the illusion that, you know, you had your imagination and everything was a wonder to you. You see what I'm saying?
That's right.
That's what makes it so powerful. But the funny thing that I'm going to tell you about is because, see, I was born around, say, 93. So, basically, in the 90s, they said that different kids were being born with, a different type of DNA structure or something like that.
Right.
Right. So, supposedly, now, I mean, I'm not going too much into the new age, but supposedly they were called the indigo.
Right, the indigo. And then, of course, we have the crystal and the rainbow children, you know. And actually, some say that it actually started after World War II, where the ancestors found it necessary in order to re-encode the DNA, in order to be reawaken within the individuals who was able to go beyond just the physical realm consciousness, you know, and who wanted to find something much more deeper and more meaningful in life. And so as they are on this search, certain DNA codes will reawaken within them. And, you know, and therefore, you know, we started developing more than just two strands of DNA. And based on what has been, you know, studied, there are children being born, as you said, who are the so-called indigo children, rainbow children, or the crystal children who have three strands of DNA. You know, there's a book called The Super Psychics of China, in which that in the book it specifically speak about this this little Chinese guy, you know, who...
he's cool, you know.
Right, they refer to him as little God. And what happened was is that one of the, I guess bodyguards or whatever the case is, started messing with him, and he told him, you know, basically, you know, that if you don't stop messing with me, I'm gonna take, I'm gonna take your money in your pocket and put it in his pocket, you know, and vice versa, you know, whatever the case is. And you know, he was telling him, like, look, if you don't stop messing with me, you know, I can seriously mess you up. And so, you know, he did it for him and took the dude's money, you know, that was in his, you know, his pocket, you know, the, you know, and put it in the other guy's pocket, you know, mentally.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, they say that these children are able to fill up glass, you know, with air, you know, make condense the water in the, you know, the air, you know, into water and fill up a glass. You know, so, I mean, these are things which that is going on right now. And the more that you practice Qigong or Tai Chi, the more that these abilities reawaken within you. So we talk about, you know, children who, you know, 15, 16 generations of, you know, Qigong and Tai Chi expertise, you know, what we refer to now as Kung Fu, you know, and the word Kung means to develop, you know. So, you know, cultivate, you know, Qigong means to, means energy or breath work or energy development or cultivation. So, you know, that Kung, you know, which is short for Kundalini, you know, is the power in which that you are unleashing, you know, in order to be able to do these particular things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was gonna say that, you know, because people have said that to me. I never really considered myself one. I mean, I was just born in the 90s, and I mean, I'm pretty sure that I'm a pretty. I mean, I don't say that ego. I'm just pretty sure that I'm an evolved soul. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't fall for the bullshit. You know. Are you still there, Lynn?
Oh, yeah, we here. Keep it popping.
Oh, okay. I was like, it's like, I don't fall for it. And ever since I was a kid, it was just really hard for adults to kind of tell me, you know, there's a difference with just being rebellious, but it's like something in me sensed, you know, this is for control. This is only for control. This is limiting my imagination. This is, you know, limiting my creativity. You know, all these sorts of things. And, I mean, it always seemed to come from adults, but just the way that my soul was, or, you know, I mean, the way I was, you know, I'd never fall for, you know what I'm saying, the nonsense and the lies, especially when I was really young and I saw those planes at the towers, you know, I'm saying I always felt that was staged.
Yeah, I know we done seen enough buildings fall down demolition style in order to know that was rigged. But of course, those who's never seen it or never paid attention, then of course, you know, they fell for the okie dokie.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's just from a kid, like, it's just certain things, like, I wouldn't fall for them. You know, I wouldn't say that necessarily makes me an indigo, but I could sense certain things, you know. And I knew if they were true and if people were really coming from the heart when they said it. And I knew, you know, if they were lying. You know what I'm saying? Like, a salesman hardly could ever get me whenever they call. Or just, you know, whoever. But I was going to say, the funny thing is, I know you said you heard about Pokemon, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the interesting thing is now, I mean, they messed up the show now. Now the show is just whack. It's nothing like I knew whenever, you know, I was growing up. I mean, and that was an awesome show too. But basically, the funny thing is the first league that they had in the first episode was called the Indigo League. you know, and you got to collect these certain badges by beating certain gym leaders. Now, each gym leader is a certain element. So, I mean, you had rock, fire, earth, each of the elements, and each Pokemon possessed that certain power, you know, within them. The thing that's interesting about Pokemon is if you go back to the first movie, basically, this came out in, like, 1999, right?
Right.
So this was the first movie. Now, if you remember, there was this original Pokemon that nobody had ever seen called Mew. Now, this Pokemon had the DNA of every single Pokemon. Now, they created this clone from it, which was basically an extraction from the original Mew, and they called it Mewtwo. Now, Mewtwo, of course, his abilities was psychic. I mean, he could perform any attack, but these were psychic Pokemon. And basically, the scientists, the Mew was already, you know, from the beginning. And Mew, you actually see, if you watch the movie, you see him in a hieroglyph. And if you look at the Pokemon card, he's in a hieroglyph. Now, I mean, that could either be Heru, or I'm pretty sure, because you see Mewtwo, because the way that they play it off in the movie, it's Horus and Set again. But Mewtwo is pissed off because he feels that, you know, he wasn't original, and he basically was created to serve humans or whatever, and he said, no, I'm going to take this shit for myself. So they go into this stadium. I don't know. Have you seen this movie before, Lee? Elaine?
Yeah, we here. Come on.
Oh, no, I'm saying, have you seen this movie before?
Yeah, I've seen the first one.
Oh, okay. All right, mm-hmm. So he gets all these clones. The Pokemon trainers, Ash and all them, have to go to the stadium, and they go there to meet Mewtwo. And you'll see all these black balls with eyes come and capture all the Pokemon, then make them into clones. And so basically, you know, the original Pokemon versus the clones. And they'll each be battling each other. And I mean, even though it's Pokemon, if you were a kid, it was sad to watch. But these Pokemon would be just really attacking each other to the point that they couldn't attack each other anymore. And then, you know what I mean? I mean, they'd be crying, and they'd be attacking each other to the point where they couldn't attack each other anymore. And then, Ash, who is the, you know, hero in the movie, runs in between because he wants to save, I mean, his best friend, Pikachu, and he gets turned into stone. And then, you know, Mew is basically telling Mewtwo all the time that, you know what I mean? Like, you haven't learned yet. You don't know what heart is. And Mewtwo is all about the ego. You know, he's always about, you know, basically, you know, I wasn't created to serve humans. You know, I'm not a clone. I'm not just an experiment. So, I mean, he's pissed off. But what happens in the movie is, you know, I mean, of course this is something you're going to have to decode. But through all the tears of the Pokemon and the energy, brings Ash back to life. And then Mewtwo basically realizes this is madness, trying to get the original Pokemon to go against clones. And saying, you know what I'm saying, basically, you know, he takes all his clones with him, and he flies away, and he says, you know, it's not the circumstances where one's birth is irrelevant. It's what you do with the gift of life that, you know, determines who you are. You know? I mean, that was a deep movie, man.
Yeah, yeah, that's profound right there. No doubt about it.
Yep. And I mean, it's showing, because I say this, I mean, at one point, I'm sure, well, I mean, just the school, they always have this type of thing where it's just like, it always seemed, you know, like the white kids, you know what I'm saying? If you weren't white, people would almost frown upon you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, not people of color, but I'm saying people, white people,
right,
would almost frown upon you. Now, the weird thing is, I would used to think, you know what I'm saying, that I was. And at one point, I thought, like, I wanted to be, because, you know, I was just tired of, like, people always from the color, you know, and shit like that. You know what I mean? And then, you know, I mean, of course, as I became conscious, then I'm like, well, if I didn't have, you know, this, the sun would be fucking me up right now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, no, I mean, it's a blessing. But what it's saying, though, I mean, the true message is that, now, I mean, of course, you know, I mean, there's an advantage, and I mean, it's better to be original, but it's just saying, it's really what's in your soul and in your heart that makes you who you are. Everything else is just, you know, like an illusion, like you said. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, even within the occult, you know, realm, I mean, the only thing in which that is real, you know, is the soul, you know, which is God, you know, in which that inhibits the physical body, and the body is the temple of God. So the temple itself, you know, comes through the earthly elements coming together in some shape, form, or fashion, and being composed or held together by the breath itself, which is centrifugal and centrifugal force. So when we talk about the soul, of course, within Hebrew, they refer to it as ruku or ro, you know, in which that is derived from the ancient Egyptian word ra, you know. So, you know,
right.
The soul is ra, and of course, you know, in its various aspects, whether it's Atum Ra or Ptah Ra or Amin Ra, you know, those are nothing more than various forms of Ra. Ra is known as the oldest god or the oldest deity, you know what I'm saying, in ancient Kemet. Matter of fact, even within Hebrew today, they still refer to God as Ra, you know. So, you know, there is, you know, that's the science on the soul. And being that, you know, even when we come in tune with this consciousness and information, you know, people will have to realize that. They say, oh, you know, you might be look young, you know what I'm saying, but they have to realize, they say, oh, man, you got an old soul. You know, when they see and, you know,
right.
When they with you and they, you know, well, that old soul is talking about Ra. You know what I'm saying? Ra is the oldest deity, the oldest Neturu, you know, of the Neturus, you know, within the Egyptian mythology or pantheon. So, you know, when we talk, you know, about that, we have to realize, you know, what we really are saying, you know. And so the soul comes within man. And one of the things in which that verifies that is the activation of the pineal gland, you know, so that the soul can escape, you know what I'm saying? So the soul has the tendency of breaking out the shell of the body, you know what I'm saying? And that is through, you know, being conscious and through the raising, you know, or the ascension of the Kundalini itself, which is the feminine mother principle, you know, within your physical body. You know, it's the concentration of prana, you know, at the base of your spine, you know, at what is known as the sacral, you know, bone area, you know, which is right above the coccyx or the tail part, you know, or the hind part, you know, above the crack of the ass, really, you know, and
exactly.
Right, so that is the abode, you know, of the Kundalini. And so as she is awakened, she symbolizes Orset within the Egyptian mythology, or Temurian or Kemetan mythology. And as she goes and through the seven caves looking for the body parts of Osar to bring him back together again in order to make him whole, you know, as she journeyed through those seven caves, that symbolizes the seven chakras, you know, just like the seven dragon balls. And so as she comes to the last, you know, place or cavern, you know, within the Sanskrit is known as the cave of Brahma. You know what I'm saying? Within the Bible, Abraham is nothing more than a form of Brahma. And Abraham, you know, becomes the father of many nations or many seeds, you know, and his wife is known as Sarah. Well, it's no coincidence that Brahma's wife is called Sarah, you know, as in Saraswati. Yeah, so whenever people realize, you know, the biblical mythology, you know, and how it's connected to world mythology, then we begin to, you know, heighten our consciousness. But there's been a stop, you know, of this, you know, purposely from the various Christian belief system, from the Islamic belief system, from the Judaism belief system, in order to keep us, you know, wrangled within that one, you know, particular thought system, you know, known as the monotheistic belief system. And so when we break out of that, that's when the soul can actually journey, because it seems that those, you know, the way in which that is being told in those particular belief system is actually a form of hell, you know, or, you know, Kundalini being held down, as I would say, you know. And as it's being held down, you can't break the confines of the physical body, and you can't journey into the astral plane or the soul plane in order to, you know, to meet with the ancestors or communicate with the ancestors or, you know, and this is done, you know, actually in a sense naturally as children, but as we age because of all the negative debris and because of all the environment and the negative forces, you know, especially the bioplasmic negative energy in which that accumulates around our own auric field, it stops us from being able to make these particular journeys in order to find, you know, real answers or go into what is called the Akashic Records. And I think that's one reason why Ash was called Ash within the Pokemon, was because of the word Akashic, you know, which that, you know, means that's the record place. That's the universal library. That's where we go when we close our eyes at night, and we are able to, you know, close our two physical eyes, but yet still see a whole other world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, if you see on the first episode, when all that's done after he just fought it was a bunch of Spearhosts trying to attack Pikachu. You know what I'm saying? That's the electric mouse. After all that's done, when there's a rainbow, he sees this golden bird named Ho-Oh. You heard of that before?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The very first episode. You know, there's a rainbow, and he sees Ho-Oh. Now, I could be wrong, but that looks awfully familiar to me. And it's called Ho-Oh.
Right.
And it's a phoenix.
Right.
A phoenix.
Right. And it's no coincidence that it just makes almost the sound phonetically as the sound of which that Santa Claus is supposed to say, right?
Right.
Right. In which that he symbolizes Saturn, in which that symbolizes the Kundalini at the base of the spine, in which that is the symbol or the element is lead, in which that as the sun comes down, you know, within the 3 days, it stands still in the sky, known as the winter solstice, in which that we just went by December the 21st through 24th. And then on the 25th, it begins its ascension from out of the grave or tomb, as it is referred to as, back into being birthed once again 9 months later in the month of September under the month, you know, under the sign of Virgo, the zodiac sign of Virgo, in which that Virgo is the Virgin. So hence Mary birthing Jesus once again, you know, so that story is ever coming astrologically, you know, and so these are just things in which that, you know, when we do our research, we can, you know, put this shit together, you know, and make some sense out of it. But as long as, you know, people are trying to fight, you know, battle each other back and forth, you know, having these little Facebook wars and shit, you know, really, you know, they don't really get concrete information where they need to because they not doing enough research, you know. So
right, you will mm-hmm. get more. I mean, I'm not saying, but you will get more just watching these shows where I've been drawing energy for probably the last couple of years has been from Dragon Ball, and it's just because they put so much in there, and there's so much energy and there's so much inspiration that you can draw. Now we're going to get into the Namekians if we still have some time.
Yeah, we do.
All right, so the Namekians, you know, those are the green people. So green, what are you saying?
No, go ahead.
Oh, the Namekian people are the green beings, look kind of like, you know, they have these antennas, and these were the original people that, or beings that created the Dragon Balls, and they have antennas, you know, on their heads, and basically, I mean, you know, I mean, you could go with a green that could be symbolic to chlorophyll or melanin or, I mean, but these are the people that created the Dragon Balls. So they are the creator of what comes out to be Shenron or the dragon or the Naga. So, I mean, but when you really go into it, it's interesting because these are, like, really calm and peaceful people on planet Namek. You know what I'm saying? Dende, who's there, he's the healer. And he'll heal, you know, I mean, any Saiyan that was wounded or in battle, he'll wound, I mean, he'll heal them. And then there was Kami, if you remember Kami, that's a really old-ass looking dude.
Right,
you know.
And there's no coincidence that the word Kami comes from the word Cam, which that is Ham, which is one of the names biblically of Egypt, you know, as well as also, you know, like you said, being a healer. So they're telling you right there that the information comes from Egypt, you know, being the old, you know, in other words, being the ancient one. You know, that's the story of the ancient one, Melchizedek. You know, the word Mel within Greek means black, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, and he was known, Melchizedek within the Bible was known as the Ancient of Days. You know, so he was the old one. Like I said, symbolic to Ra once again, but, you know, as it spread out throughout the particular stories, you know, as these stories spread out throughout the different, you know, I guess you could say religions or languages, it takes on, you know, another form. That's why you have to do comparative religious study in order to see how all of these stories connect, you know, whether it's biblically coming from the Hebrew, coming from the Christian, coming from,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Buddhism, Shintoism, Taoism, you know, mm-hmm. Zoroastrianism, you know, all of these stories connect, and they was nothing more than the same stories told over and over again, and some of the names might change, but, you know, most of the time the plot or the story remains the same. You know, it's just like the story
yeah.
of, you know, like we have of, you know, Superman. You know, every time we can see another Superman story coming. You know, Hancock was a Superman story, you know,
yeah.
If you want to say it. But, you know, Superman was based on the original Superman story, which was Hero. You know, which the word hero is derived from. So anytime you see a story about heroes, you actually is getting nothing more than the original story from Heru.
From Heru, yeah. Exactly. And I was going to say, because, I mean, of course you have Dende, and you have Mr. Popo, if you remember that guy. I think he has, like, a turban on or something.
Yeah, he does.
And Piccolo does, too. And you always see Piccolo, you know what I'm saying?
Right, symbolic to the Moors. Right, that was symbolic
yeah.
to the Moors, right. And people don't realize that, you know, Mr. Popo, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, with symbolic, you know, and they show you, you know, black and then with the lips and everything, you know, looking like a H.O., you know, character from the Bugs Bunny, you know, cartoons. But, you know, he was the one in which that gave helpful advice, as well as also, you know, the Namek, you know, he was able to, you know, do all types of things, and he always would take his fingers and put to his third eye whenever he was doing astral projection and, you know, and different things like that, if you remember. So they always showed you that them with the turban on was symbolic to the Moors, but also the abilities or the capabilities in which that we possess, you know, if we actually, utilize our, you know, melanin, which is, of course, the difference between melanin and chlorophyll is only one magnesium molecule. The molecules look identical, except at the center is one within iron, you know, within melanin is iron, and within chlorophyll is magnesium. So there's only one magnesium molecule difference.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard that. I was gonna say that where they always go if they need a train, it's very similar. Now, you'll see Kami there, and if you remember in the Dragon Ball, Goku had to catch this cat.
Right.
Now, that cat...
Mm-hmm.
Now, you'll see that cat in Asian culture. You'll see that cat in Egyptian culture. I mean, that could be Bastet. I mean, that could be
right.
So many things. But remember, he had to catch this cat, and this cat had the sensu beam. And the sensu beam would restore all your energy. You know, I mean, if you were, like, I mean, about to faint or die or something, you know, they had those sensu beams.
Right, after they get their butts whipped up real bad by other beings, they always needed the sensu beam in order to, you know, rejuvenate themselves.
Right, mm-hmm.
I remember that. You know, and that's no coincidence that the word, you know, is connected to the word shen, in which that means spirit, like we was talking about before. So what it does is revitalize, you know, the physical aspect of the spirit, which is the physical body, and the materialistic aspect of the spirit, I should say, which is the physical body. And interestingly, you know, when we look at that, you know, it shows you about the science of herbology in that regard, in which that is real well known within the Orient, you know, that when you practice Qigong or Qi, you know, you have to study medicine, which is talking about herbology along with it, you know, as well as acupressure and acupuncture, you know, in order to know the various meridians and nadis, you know, within the physical body, so that you can redistribute, you know, energy to deficient areas and, you know, and cool down excessive heated areas within the body. So these are just things in which that, obviously, that sensu beam, you know, that's obviously what it used, you know, was put in the cartoon for, was to help master, you know, or to give us the, you know, inkling of what was really taking place.
Yeah, I wonder if he was channeling a lot of this. I mean, because, I mean, there's just so much in there.
Now, I think he was a student, you know, of Qigong, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think he studied. I think that's what, you know, the information was really, you know, was about.
Do you think he brought any of this information, you know, from his ancestors or from the spirit world?
You know, partially. I mean, when you do some type of study, I mean, remember within the Asian culture, they have traditions in a culture in which that transmit orally stories, you know what I'm saying, about their mothers and fathers and, you know, grandmothers and great-grandfathers and, you know, so forth and so on. You know, and if you come, you know, within that particular lineage, you know, and if they was practitioners of Qigong, Tai Chi, or Kung Fu, or whatever the case is, then, you know, definitely, more than likely, you would get that information, you know, especially in the advanced, you know, Kung Fu. That's what you learn. Remember, if you go back and watch Master Killer, 36 Chambers, you know, Gordon Liu, you know, ran up in the damn highest temple, you know, where they was damn beating on, brass bowls, you know, and, you know, enchanting. You know, and he, you know, he running up in there to the priest, to the high priest, to the abbot, talking about, I want to learn Kung Fu. you know, and Abbott was like, out. And
out.
He wouldn't move. He was still standing there. And he said, out. And then on the third one, he just took his etheric body and just pushed his ass down in order to make him go out. And, you know, and so when
right.
he runs out, you know, he runs into the priest and wish that, you know, that he asked, you know, to go into the highest. And he said, I don't know what that is, but that's not kung fu. And the priest told me, he said, that's the highest kung fu you ever learned.
Oh, yeah. See, that's why I went, I did learn, Taekwondo, but I used to kick so high, I only got it to about the blue belt, where I, like, pulled, like, I pulled, like, a hamstring or something, and I was just, like, walking real funny, you know, for the next, couple of months or so. I had to get therapy and stuff. I only got to about blue belt with the Taekwondo, but that's why I wanted to get into the Qigong, because I felt, I learned, different styles from friends and stuff like that, but I felt like the Qigong was the most important kung fu.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's the origin of the heart style is the soft style. You know, I mean, that's how the heart style came. Matter of fact, Bodhidharma brought it from out of India, as he was descended from the Kushite people from out of Africa, as Bodhidharma traveled into Asia, he taught the priests what is called the 18 hands of Lohan. And that was like the first Qigong, you know, and he had to teach them because the priests was falling, you know, these members and priests, you know, students was falling asleep while they supposed to been practicing, you know what I'm saying, or meditating, you know. And
right.
So he realized that, you know, he had to give them moving meditation, you know, in order to correct themselves, you know. And so, you know, that's how Qigong, you know, was utilized, in which that soon became known as the 18 Hands of Lohan, you know, in which that, which is the origin of what we now know as, of course, Tai Chi and, of course, Wing Chun and Qigong and, you know, well, excuse me, Kung Fu and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the art form. See, that's what I love about it because, I mean, it's art.
Right.
And that's what makes it, you know, it's creative. There's no stagnation to it.
Right. Well, do me a favor, we're getting ready to go to the second half, but what we want you to do is definitely break down on what you're studying now as far as the Qigong. I know recently you got certified, you know what I'm saying, Qigong 1, you know, so, tell us about that and the event in which that happened.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so basically, you know, I mean, it came through the Dragon Ball, which that gave me the idea that it was at least possible. You know, I just thought it was, you know, just maybe some type of, you know, I mean, people would just make it seem like it wasn't real. And, I mean, I remember just being young and, like, trying to turn out candles and throwing energy balls and trying to turn out candles, you know, from stuff I saw on YouTube. And, I started practicing at, what's it called, the Heart of Qigong by Wong Vu Kit.
Right.
So I was practicing that, and I would feel kind of like a sensation, but I started thinking, like, you know, because when you're doing certain stuff, your logical mind is always trying to say, you know, I mean, this isn't doing anything. You know, I mean, it just won't shut up sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the more I began practicing it, you know, I mean, I began to feel like a sensation, but it was never so continuous. It's like I would try to have a schedule where I do it continuous, and I would do it as much as I can, but I was just busy, you know, doing different things. But when I went to the Qigong rep, we practiced, like, the whole day. That's all we did. Myself and my mother went there, and they taught us, you know, they taught us what's called Tumo. They taught us what was called
two mode breathing. They taught us basically this whole thing takes about an hour, but this will
right. And for those
energy.
Who don't know what two mode breathing is, what it does is from the certain breath technique, what you do is put fire into your belly. In other words, it warms your insides. That is also the technique in which that the monks use in order to melt snow around them as they are practicing that particular breath technique. So even in the freezing cold, they can melt snow around them. This is also the technique in which that they use in order to light up a light, you know, a light bulb also within their hands. So take advantage of what the brother is talking about and do your research.
Yeah, that's actually what he said at the place. He was like, yeah, this is what monks use to, you know, heat up snow. And he showed us basically how to cultivate that energy into our three Dantians. That one was called Empty Force.
Mm-hmm. Well, what
right?
I refer to as empty retention, exactly, which is pranic breathing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So basically you're doing, it's kind of like the hugging the tree pose, but you're not holding your hands in just one position. You're bringing that energy back as you're visualizing and bringing that energy back. And then there were, now this is just level one, but so far to me this is the most effective as far as, you know, recharging your energy and all that, giving you energy. So you have empty force, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have what's called, which is very similar to the, what's it called, lifting the sky. But this one is called cloud hands. And what you're doing is you're putting your hands in front of you like a cup, bringing it up to your face. As you exhale, you're expanding your hands up, and then it's going. And then kind of like an eagle, you know, I mean, you're letting your hands go gently back down. It's very similar to carrying the moon, except, you know, I mean, not bending forward like that.
Right.
Then there was earth hands, which, I mean, you're inhaling, putting your hands, circling like about three times and going down. Now, earth hands, I mean, you are just generating an energy field around you. See, when he did it, I mean, he had a visualization up there. So, you know, like how you see in Dragon Ball?
Right.
You know, when they're shooting energy beams? He had that going around his hands. So it was easier for people to, you know what I'm saying, visualize, at least.
Right.
And then they have this one called carrying around the world, which is around the world, which you're moving on your central axis, and it's a palm-facing-palm connection. And what you're doing is you're moving from left to right, and you're feeling the energy, you know, balance, like you're holding a ball right in between your palms.
Right.
So once I went through all that, and then there's this other one called push hands. Now, push hands was one of the most profound that I've tried because when you start out, you feel it's kind of weak, but once you begin, you know, doing it daily, you can feel almost as if, like, there's, say, an arm or a wave just pushing your hand to the other side. And instead of you using your hand, you know, you're feeling a wave put your hand to the other side.
Right, right. All right. We're going to hold it right there. It's the top of the hour. And I'm going to try to bring on Brother D. Bragg. Hopefully he's here. And hold on. Stay with us, Brother Mike, okay?
No doubt.
Greetings. Peace. It is Brother D. Bragg.
Yes, sir.
All right, all right.
How are you, bro?
We
that was
well,
good,
brother.
Man. I'm sitting here like, can I listen some more?
Don't worry, we're going to put it on in, you know, because, you know, we decoding everything tonight. So we did the cartoons, the children cartoons, and now we're getting ready to go into the Django joint, because you know, that's what people are on here ready to listen to also. So we ready for you. What you got? What you felt from it?
Well, first, I just want to say that I enjoyed that convo, and the main reason why is because I teach my little 4-year-old breathing, which
right.
I started to help her not cry when she would fall and bust her behind somewhere.
Right.
You know, I have recently started teaching her about her chi energy, so I was really like sitting there into that convo. But okay, now I got the opposite. Now I was into it because I that's stuff that I teach my little 4-year-old.
Right.
So
no,
I'm listening.
Say,
I wish I could have taken notes.
Oh, don't worry. We'll get back into it.
I was gonna say peace. Yeah, it was funny because last night, right before I was falling asleep, I was watching a Lean lecture. And then I see this guy talking on here about agents or some shit like that. And I just zoned out watching the whole thing. And then I found out, oh, that's who he's bringing on tonight? I was like, I never even heard of him before.
Excellent. It's all love. Well, you know what, bro? The thing is, my thought process is about... First, what is the pronunciation of that movie? Django?
Yeah, Django.
And please, you know, you're a person, when it comes to more science, so forth and so on, you're someone that I'll sit down and listen to. And everybody knows me, I'm hard-headed, I don't listen to many, but you're one. Now, please tell me if I'm way off base with this. When I watched it, I got the thought process of, wow, like, I remember, look at the clothing he's wearing. Like when he first, do you remember the beginning of the movie when Django, the German dude, was like, "Go pick your clothes." He's like, "You want me to pick my own clothes?" And then the what he wore,
right?
Was that? It seemed to me, and again, if I'm wrong, then please let me know. But it appeared to me that his choice of clothing was very more inspired. Like I swear, I've seen paintings of the Moors in Spain with the exact same outfit that he first wore with would look like the boat, like the big tie, or am I completely off base?
No, you are definitely correct. And matter of fact, it was Masonic too, because he wore the color blue, in which that was symbolic to the Blue Lodge or the Blue House, which is the first 3 degrees into apprentice, fellow craftsman, and fellow master mason. You know, and the reason why I thought that was interesting is because, not just because of the color, but it showed him in his progression of becoming free. And matter of fact, if you remember, around that same time, the German gave him the last name Freeman.
Freeman.
You know, Freeman. You know, so this is Django Freeman. You know, so it was right around that same time. So symbolic to, you know, Freemasonry. You know what I'm saying? And the reason why he had on those particular colors of blue, you know, and that was an interesting scene, you know, and that's what I felt, you know. And remember, he killed the 3 ruffians. Who was the first people that he killed?
For sure, he killed you talking about? The German cat is the one who killed the dude that was carrying him.
Right.
Yeah, when he came in.
Right.
The first dude Django killed, the first ones he killed was, I believe, when he just shot them dudes on his own.
It was called the 3 Brittle Brothers.
Yeah, the Brittle Brothers, yes.
Right, Brittle. You know, come on, when we think about Brittle, what that means? Something that breaks up real easily.
Breaks easily, yes.
You know what I'm saying? But then they changed the name to Schaefer.
Yep, they did.
You know,
they sure did.
You know, when the word Schaefer is a German word also.
Yep, it sure enough is.
While
growing up, my best friend was German, and he had a aunt who was from Germany. I met her last name was Schaefer. I remember that. So
right.
When I heard that name, I was like, and so I'm watching it. Like, first of all, let me preface it by saying, I think based on the story that brown people in this country have been told about slavery, if they're going to believe that wholeheartedly, anyone who doesn't like it has the right to say, I'm not going to see it because I don't want to deal with slavery. Or if they watch it, and even if they want to sit there with their arms crossed, they have that right. So my whole discussion with the movie is not about whether or not a brown person should be upset or emotional about this. I just think that I haven't heard really rational discussions. It's either like I hated it and I didn't see it, or I saw it, and no matter what you tell me, I'm mad about the fact that those dogs mauled the slave. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's either this or that to me. Because I know, for me, what caught my attention, what made me actually say, and I did not pay. I saw it online for free. So that's the irony. Like, I had people argue with me on Facebook and basically almost call me a sellout because I said, well, I wasn't mad at the joint, but yet you went and spent $50 and gave that white boy your money, and I saw it online for free. So at the end of the day, I'm like, who's really the fool here? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I didn't pay for that. You know what I'm
right.
saying? So,
right.
Once I saw that Reginald Hudlin was a producer, that's what made me go, okay, now, you know, let me go check this out. I had the
right.
opportunity to work with Reginald Hudlin, and Reginald Hudlin is famed for House Party, which I think, to me, growing up, was one of the best. That was my coolie high.
It was.
When I was growing up, House
Mine
Party.
Too. Mine too.
You know what I mean? And then he did Boomerang, and I've always said, Boomerang, him and his brother, and I've always said, I would put Boomerang against any romantic comedy Hollywood throws out. I don't even call
too.
Boomerang a black romantic comedy. And then he was the exec producer of Boondocks. So I keep trying to tell these brown people that we got to stop being so myopic when it comes to Hollywood. It's like, it's almost as if you got, if you had the red cape on, brown America would look and go, well, he must be the one. It's like, nah, in film, the director has only a little bit more authority than the actor does, unless your name is even Quentin Tarantino. And I'm like, if you believe for 1 minute that Reginald Hudlin was not standing on his shoulder going, hey, do this, do that, nah, bro, you're going to get yourself in trouble if you do this, you're tripping. You know, and what I saw a lot of it, like I said, you can break down the whole Moorish aspect, so at least you know that I was on that vibe. You feel what I'm saying? Like, when I was watching, I was like, yo, like, y'all not saying, but see, my thought process was when I looked at his hair and all the other things, I was like, I kind of guessed, and you let me know again if you think I'm really too far off, that he was, that he got caught, that he was a seaman, a Moor status-wise, but he did something and got caught up. Because I'm like, he didn't look like the rest of the slaves, even physically. He had the lashes on his back, but I was looking at his hair, and I was going, it's like that Frederick Douglass thing he had going on. And then when the Germans found him, I said to myself, well, normal slaves, you're not going to be able to find them like that. But if you were once a free person who got caught up in the mix and the people know, and there are those who know you got caught up in the mix, somebody can come and find you. That was what my thought process was, that if there was a prelude to that film, that you would have thought, oh, no, he was free. He just did something, broke the law, whatever. You know how it was back then. You break the law, you're going to the plantation. You're basically a slave. You know, so that was what my creative thought process was. But as I watched the film, you know, I've explained to people that brown people who won't watch the film, I said, yo, to be honest with you, even Samuel L. Jackson's character, the house slave, that old man ran that plantation, and he was very witty and intelligent. There was nothing Stephen Fetchett about him. I was like, to be honest, his behavior to me was no different than the average African-American is to another African-American. If you're working in the White House, you think that the African American aide to the Secretary of State want to see another brown person walking that heck to the no? I tried to get a job at Target just part time in between my gigs, and I got interviewed by this brother who looked at me like, "Snitter, please, I'm not hiring you." Why? Because he was the only brown dude in there, and he had a high position. I went through the entertainment industry, where you walk in and there's another brown person, they look at you like, what's that nigga doing on that nag? You know what I'm saying? I'll be like, you know, you walk through, like, you don't get in the big house too. So I'm like, yo, dog, honestly speaking, to me, that's what I saw in Samuel's character. And then I was telling this cat, I said, and if you really peep the game at the end, I said, he was schooling Leonardo DiCaprio's character. I was like, remember, when he called to the library, Leonardo walking like a kid, my man was sitting there with his leg crossed with a glass of Devassier. You know,
right.
Even at the end, when he was telling Jamie Foxx, and what really bugged me out was he told him, like, yeah, we could, you know, burn your pilot parts off, but after he said, nah, we're going to send you to whatever mining system, he said, and they're going to make you bust big rocks down to little rocks for the rest of the days of your life. And I said, yo, that he just told Django that prison was worse than what he could have got from running, than anything else he could go through. I'm like, did anybody keep that? He just told him, like, prison, because that's what it is. He was sending him to prison. You dig what I'm saying? So I'm watching him
all his life.
Yeah, I'm
right.
So I'm watching it, and then I told the sisters, I'm like, yo, listen, I know, you know, like, because I watched it in the beginning with the screw face. I don't cut the white boy no slack. I'm ready to bang on these crackers in their system. So I sat there for like 45 minutes with the screw face, but then after about an hour, I was like, honestly, I ain't been offended yet. Even the use of the word nigger, I was like, if you listen to how they were saying it, it was so over the top that it's like you don't see the comedy in that. Like, I was like, the only thing people go, oh, you know, I don't want to, I guess it's not entertainment to me to see a black male slave get torn apart by dogs. I keep telling people, nah, when it came to the, and again, you see, let me know if you think I'm far off. When it came to certain aspects, I said, yeah, you saw him raise the whip, but then you heard the crack. And you heard the squeal. Now, if they let your imagination take off with what would have happened, I said, but Django was killing them crackers wholesale. I ain't seen a movie like that. It's Blade. Was the last superhero movie I've seen where some brother was just killing these crackers for wholesale. And Wesley had to do it under the guise of vampires. I said, I told my brother who was like, I don't want to say, I said, yo, ain't even a bullet grazed that man. I said, as a matter of fact, they're talking about the little scenes about the world when the Mandingos were fighting. I said, they still ain't really show nothing. But daughter, they ain't show every time that white boy got his head blown off. I said, I told my brother, as a matter of fact, in one of the fight scenes, they were shooting each other five or six times because he was picking up dead bodies, sliding across the floor with it. And all you saw was him laying in between these white boys who were already shot up, getting shot up some more. I'm like, so all the gratuitous violence was directed at the slave owners and the people that work with them. I said, they showed you how stupid they were, that scene with Don Johnson, who was Big Daddy, the whole KKK scene.
Oh, you saw him on the horse?
Yeah. They were showing so many of the fallacies of the story of slavery we've been told in the United States of America that I'm like, in reality, if you look at it with your open eye, you would kind of start to question some of what we've been told because they're showing you like, yo, some of this is such a fallacy, it's almost improbable that you told me it happened. So for me, I walked away and said that if in America, not the Caribbeans, but in America, if slavery went down the way they said it did, then either A, you're not telling me the truth, or B, you need to tell your scientific community to just start admitting that the black man is a Superman. Because ain't nowhere in the world that anybody can go through that every day and still get up the next day and pick your cotton. My great-grandmother, who was 90-some years old when I was a little kid, from the age of 10 to 12, 10 to 13, I used to go there every summer. And she never taught me about slavery. She used to talk to me about how her mother used to have to pick cotton. And she lived on the same plantation. Then I realized, oh, you were sharecroppers. That's what she told me. And I went and tried to pick cotton. Healthy. It's hard. So you're telling me that you whip everybody all the time? Nah, be something irrational about that. And that movie showed a lot of things that I'm like, can at least be questioned about it. And I thought, like, and they dealt with paperwork so much to the day, it just was hitting me upside the head, like, yo, like, they really, you know, I'm like, I don't, so that's what kind of got me when I watched it, was that there were so many different things that they showed. I mean, they went to Candyland, I mean, they paid the whole homage to Kemet, I mean, what did they zoomed in on the doorknobs, that I forget, I think they had an eye Haru on. And then that was like his favorite woman. Her name was Sheba. You never saw him slap her, disrespect her, but you darn sure saw that Leonardo DiCaprio's character be damn near incestuous with his sister.
That's right.
You feel what I'm saying? You saw that? Right. I was like, you saw at the end of that joint that how wrong was it that since when you ever seen a film where the last victim killed is a white chick? He blew that broad's chest open.
He sure did.
No remorse.
Blew her back.
With no remorse.
And told his sisters, say goodbye to so and so and so. Say, go ahead and say goodbye.
Yeah, with no remorse. And the people that criticized with Samuel Jackson's character, I'm like, yo, if he was a step infection, he was hard body because he stayed on that to the end.
Right.
He had you on the floor and died when he said, oh, Lord Jesus Christ, please let me kill this nigga. I fell out laughing because I said, yo, he going to stay there to the end.
I did too. But see, this is the amazing part is that I actually counted how many times they used the word nigga in there.
How many times?
It was 93 times. And the reason why I had to count is because I know that there's also symbolism behind, you know, the reason why they had to use it that many times. Well, you know, of course, we know that the word, you know, nigga is derived actually from the word naga. You know, which means god or serpent deity or, you know, serpent god, you know, symbolic to your Kundalini, as we was talking about earlier, me and Brother Mike was talking about earlier
about
Dragon Ball Z, right, how it symbolizes the dragon.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
what is happening, that when you say the word, but see, the word Naga also means light, L-I-G-H-T. So whenever you saying it, it's 93, you know, times, that's symbolic to the sun. The sun is the so-called giver of light of the world. You know what I'm saying? And it happens to be how many miles away from the earth? 93 million.
93
well,
million miles.
The 93rd attribute of Allah is El Nur, which means the light.
I was gonna say something, Aline.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that's funny because I was born in 93.
Right. Right.
Wow, you were young in 93. Woo, brother. I'm born in 72. But you know what's beautiful? But you know what's so beautiful to me about this? Because this ain't just me saying this. See,
right.
I'm being mundane with what I'm saying. You're taking it and breaking it down to another level that I'm like, you're exactly right. I'm being mundane with it, and 95% of people I run into ain't trying to hear it. They're like, oh, and I'm just like, nah, you got it. A lot, you know, like I said, I understand the emotional aspect, but you can't just shut down because it's like listen, I ain't never getting a white boy credit for nothing. I'm giving it to Reginald Hedlund if I'm going to give somebody credit for something. Bump that. I don't care what nobody say. But I will say at the end of the day, there was so much going on in that film. Like, they showed that nobody was redeemable. And because I was told my brother, normally in a movie like that, there's one white guy. Number one, the one good white guy was German. So he wasn't even from this country. So they showed the relationship between Germans and the Moors.
Right.
Germans and brown people. They showed that.
Hold on. There's a book called The Orientalist, in which that specifically speaks about how a Jew posed as a Moor to get out of Germany during World War II. And that was the only way he was able to get out of Germany, was to put on a fez and to be a Moor to get out.
Yep.
And so there's a book on
it. I don't know where I just
heard
that, but I just heard that. I think maybe I listened to your show yesterday. I think y'all talked about that. You and Azariah.
Right.
I think y'all, but no, you're exactly right. And I actually went and looked some of that stuff up afterwards, and I was like, wow, here it is, and this, that, and the other. And that's what people were missing. And then I told my brother, they didn't even let him have a redeemable quality because he tried to pull it. It was interesting because the one time he had a redeemable quality, when he stepped to Jamie Foxx, like, oh, you treat the slaves. And Django was like, and this is from the same man who watched me shoot a father in front of his son. German said, point taken. And walked away. So I said, they didn't even give him a redeemable quality.
Right,
he was
right.
Ill to me, like, y'all not even letting him redeem himself. And then, you know, I told the sisters, I said, listen, the only one time you saw nudity was when a baby girl was in the hot box, but it made sense. I said, they didn't show her being raped. They didn't really show her being beat. You saw her face, but you didn't see the, you know, I said, the most gratuitous violence again. I said the symbology again was all of them crackers. I was like, because the thing that I was talking about was someone who saw it and they missed and they had to go back and watch it online free. Like I gave them a joint with that. I was like, they show how gay these cats was. I said because remember when Django was hanging upside down, that dude was finessing his balls.
Right.
And then what was crazy about it when Samuel Jackson's character came in? Did y'all see the way that that white boy walked out of the barn? He was switching like his lip was wristed. He was switching like a mug. And I'm like, yo, like they're giving it to these crackers. Like this has got to be a Reginald Hedlund thing, right?
But check
right
this
here.
Out. Guess who that was? Who was walking out the bar? That was the original Django, who played Django back in 1986 and 1987 with Django.
No,
the Return of Django.
I looked that up.
Right.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and that's why he asked him. He said, "Do you know how to spell Django?" And then, you know, Jamie said, D-J-A-N-G-O, and the D is silent. You know what I'm saying? And that's who he was talking to was the original Django, you know what I'm saying, who played, you know what I'm saying? So it was like the mantle being turned, you know what I'm saying, or being, you know, passed on, you know? And so let me say this, too, about another interesting scene. Like you said about, you know, being fed to the dogs. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, people got, you know, real disturbed about that, but they didn't really. So you heard the growling. You heard, you know, you seen, you know, a little portion of the dogs, you know, biting at the clothes and so forth, but they didn't get graphic with it. Like you said, the most graphic parts that they actually showed was the white folks getting their heads blown off, just getting crazy with it. And that was, you know.
No, I was just going to say. Oh,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, even though I used to think I was white,
but I never laughed so much at a movie where white folks was getting fucked up like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, especially not them. I mean, in that situation, it was because I had, a, you know, some sister get on me about Facebook, about me saying I'm a Jordy. But I'm like, yo, you really mad because these slaves, like, think about it. On one hand, you mad at the movie Django because, oh, the slavery. But then on the other hand, I start gloating and laughing, like, telling you how, because it was fun to me. I got a kick out of it. Like, yo, this is fun.
And well, the reason why, because Django symbolizes Shango from out of the Yoruba, in which that was an ancient comedic teaching, is Heru. And for those who are in tune with the age of Heru, which is the age of Aquarius, wouldn't have a problem with understanding that science. And that was the real thing behind it. So, I mean, when you analyze Shango within the Yoruba traditions, he was the thunder god. That's where Thor originated from within the Norse, of the Nordics tales within the comic books. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And but he was the god of thunder and lightning. You know what I'm saying? So
and,
I mean, what do they say? You know what I'm saying? What do they say about guns? You know, when you shoot someone, you gun clapping. You clapping,
yeah.
Hits thunder. You know what I'm saying? And that's what they were showing was the thunder. You know what I'm saying? From his and they also remember the German also told him, he said, you know what they're gonna call you, Django? They're gonna call you the fastest man in the South. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're gonna call you the fastest gun in the South.
Right.
Yep.
And so the South symbolizes, you know, where the Kundalini energy, that Naga energy, rise up from. You know what I'm saying? So I mean this is all part of the same information. You know, and in the chat room they were talking about also with Django was whipping the white boy. You know, that he was whipping them with a whip. You know what I'm saying? You know, and you know, when we look at that, you know, that also was the cracking of the back, hence the cracking or the thunder. You know what I'm saying? Or the lightning strikes, you know what I'm saying, symbolic to Django or Shango. You know what I'm saying? So I mean they keep showing it over and over again throughout the movie, which is actually the rise of Heru. That's what that movie was actually about. The rise of Heru and the coming, you know, together once again with the feminine principle. In other words, it was the time for man, you know, so-called melanated beings, men in particular, to begin to start unifying, and for the black man to stand up, you know, the more to stand up and take back his rightful position, you know what I'm saying, and unify with his woman and protect her.
And you know what, you're right, so right with that unification, because it was all picturesque and symbolic, because, like, I got into a chat. And Cassie, I really upset me. I swear, I was like, sometimes I get appalled with the things people will say online. It's like, you really gonna say that dog over this white boy's movie? So I had to get off of it. But I was speaking to him out because the dude was like, yeah, and Django, he didn't even free none of them slaves. I said, no, you're wrong. Exactly. It was symbolic. I said when he left, that door was open, and what that was symbolic to me.
Thank you. He didn't tell him to close that damn door back. He told him to pass this damn dynamite. I'm getting ready to go back to Master's house and blow this shit up.
Yeah, and that door was open, and I said, and just like, just symbolic to what I feel of the Negro pen, that door was open, and all three of them dudes sat there looking at each other.
Right. and he told the women, he told the two sisters, you know, one was Sheba, like you said, so he didn't kill Sheba.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Sheba symbolizes the queen Sheba, or within the ancient Egyptian text, Sheba becomes Het Heru. You know what I'm saying? Or known as Hatshepsut. You know what I'm saying? And also, Kerry Washington symbolized Oya. This is what one of the brothers, Original Titan, is saying too in the chat room, that Kerry Washington symbolizes Oya, you know, the Orisha god or goddess. So their whole thing was, you know, based on, you know, that symbolism, you know, of about Shango, you know, and that energy. You know, and if we go, he says here in the room, matter of fact, he says symbolic for people today who's going around and wait for someone to free them and who's going to operate in the energy of Shango. This is the question. This is what the brother says, Original Titan.
Because the thing that I was going to say is, like, I listen to a lot of brothers when they do film breakdowns, so forth and so on, and the music, you know. And the one thing I do know is that I would tell a lot of the people that the reality is me from being there. Like, I'm still involved in the entertainment industry. You understand? I just teach performing arts to the children. Like, you know, for whatever reason, I was able to take all this white boy's information and tell everybody. And I guess whatever I did on an esoteric level, they just can't touch me. It is what it is. But the thing about it is that people have to understand these directors and producers are aware of the same things we build about. I remember going, real quick story, I knew the casting director for that movie Precious. And when it was called, whatever that movie, the original title of the book was called. And she had me go in and audition. She taught me, I said, all right, bump it. I'll go in and I auditioned for the Lee Daniels, the guy who directed Precious. And I was auditioning. He wasn't paying me no mind. I was reading the lines or whatever. And then his assistant was like, well, have you seen Lee Daniels movies? And I was like, nah, yeah, you know, I saw Monsters Ball. And he was like, well, did you see Shadowboxer? And I remember 2 days before, me and Azariah was on 125th Street, and we were building about it. And he started breaking out the mind control aspect of it. So now the comedy is, me being the jerk that I am, so I was like, yeah, I've seen it. So I regurgitated everything Azariah said just to see what they were going to say. Dr. Ali Bey, you want to know what that Hollywood director's response was?
What did he say?
Can I tell you what it was?
Yeah, please.
Whoever he was talking to on the phone, he said, hold on a second. Put his hand over the phone, he said, hold on a second. Just stay right there. He got on the phone. He said, let me call you right back. He hung the phone. He stood up. He walked towards me. He said, what did you just say about my film? And I said, yo, man, I don't mean no disrespect, but, you know, from what I studied about dealing with a cult and, you know, mind control, listening to me, it was about mind control sleepers, and that's the reason why. And he looked at me. He said, wow, you're exactly right. You're like one of the first people that came to me and actually said what I was doing with that film.
Wow.
And sat down. They were coming in. Now, of course, they didn't call me back for that audition for the role.
Right.
But so it's like these people are into this, and that's why when I saw originally if it was straight Quentin Tarantino, I would have never went to see it because he quote unquote pays homage to films like people love Kill Bill, and I'm like, dog, I have the original. He did nothing but put the Game of Death outfit on that white girl. It just, I mean, I'm talking frame by frame, the music and everything, he stripped straight from that movie that it was a Japanese movie. I forget the original name of it, but I have it somewhere in my house because I've showed it to people. Because the part where Uma Thurman is fighting in the snow, the original version, the woman is naked because she was in a hot tub, and she's fighting in the snow naked with them dudes. But that's why when I started seeing, when I saw Reginald, I said, I need to watch it. Because I'm like, I want to see what he's going to do because that's, you know, I've said to people as a filmmaker, him and Robert Townsend are like, they're like, you know, to me in my world as filmmakers when it comes to quote unquote black cinema, I'm looking at them like, you're the greatest. Hollywood Shuffle for me was one of the greatest films ever. That's why Robert Townsend ain't working right now because he prophesied what was going to happen if anyone's ever seen Hollywood Shuffle. And I've already said about Reginald, so when I saw it immediately, all of Reginald Hubbard's symbolism just popped like ping, 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 ping. And I'm looking at this joint like, yo, y'all ain't seeing this? Y'all mad at this movie? Put it to you like this. With all due respect to everyone who doesn't like it, if I'm going to have my daughter watch a fictional slave narrative, I will have her watch Django Unchained way before Roots.
No doubt.
I don't even want her to see Roots. I want to see Django Unchained. I told all them sisters, that man got, like, on one hand, y'all mad because the black woman always made it look a certain way. This man went through hell and high water, and the German told him that Norse story about the dude, the guy who tried to get his woman, and he had to go
right,
to hell.
Broomhilda.
And I'm like, Broomhilda. And I'm like, y'all can't even see what happened. That man went through hell to get his woman. But not,
yeah.
Oh, you just concerned because they said nigga 90 times? Okay. You don't know what to do with that. Like, what? Okay, nobody said nigger. All right, fine. You know what I'm saying? I mean, what can I do? Well, at that point, it's no discussion because the masses are caught up on the use of the word nigger. And, of course, then they'll go turn that off and turn the radio on and listen to Trinidad James or whoever else, whatever else hot song, where they're saying nigga in the most defiling way. So it was like, it was very interesting to me what has happened with this movie Django Unchained. But I looked at it and said, wow, like, you know, I hope I'm not wrong about what I'm looking at this Morris connection, but it just seemed to me that this dude, you know, he kept saying, I'm not a slave.
That's
in the very beginning.
Right. He said, didn't the white man tell you that I'm not a slave? And she said, for real? You ain't no slave? Now, think about it. Now, at the end of the movie, right before he's getting ready to kill off the rest of the white folks,
what did he say?
He said, man, I didn't know I looked so good in burgundy. Now, what's the color of the fez?
Please explain us to that, burgundy.
Right, thank you. So, they was putting the Moorish element into it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, like, I looked at Samuel L. Go ahead.
Oh, what's going on? No, I was going to say, did you see that movie, The Man with the Iron Fist?
I watched it because my man from WWE, Batista, was in it. It was all right. I saw it, though.
What did you think about that one?
Like I said, I watched WWE wrestling, so Batista was in it, so I turned it. Hey, you know, I'm not a dude that sits around and watches movies to analyze them, because I'm like so arrogant towards this white boy system that I ain't going to you for no answers, white boy nigger. I'm not going to you for no answers. Like, to me, that was always kind of crazy, a crazy concept. Like, you're my enemy, but I'm going to watch your programming to see what you're going to impart on me. Nah, I'm cool. So I don't even go to movies. Like, my daughter's aunt, godmother, is a working actress. I don't see her. I don't sit and watch her stuff. I have no clue what day her show comes on television. I don't know. I just know it's on, and I know that's a godmother. But, you know, I don't go to movies because, again, that just seems kind of like, I don't know. Again, I may be tripping, but I'm so arrogant towards this system that I'm like, I'm not coming to you. I'm not going to debate Dr. Eileen Bay with a book published by Westin Publishing House. That's his shit. You feel what I'm saying? Like, I'm at a debate that I'll debate with a Brother Polite book. Let me get one of Brother Polite's books. You feel what I'm saying? But I'm not. So that's how I am with movies. Like, though, I don't be looking. It's just that with that film, because I had a personal connection with Reginald Hudlin. I used to, one of my ex-girlfriends was best friends with Kerry Washington when she first started out acting. I went to the Negro Ensemble Company, the same school as Sam Jackson. He actually came back and watched a performance that I was in. So because of that personal connection, and I was kind of like, you know what, let me go see this joint, right? Let me sit and understand again, I reiterate, I watched it on ZMovie.net for free. I didn't pay dime to that white boy to see this film. And I guess if I did pay, I probably would have didn't sound everything offensive because I just spent $30, $40 because I'm on a date going to see this movie. Sitting in the mind control chamber called a movie theater. So
yeah,
that's
right.
My take on it. You know what I'm saying?
Do you feel RZA, I mean, is playing that same game? You know, like I know you said in one of your lectures, like agents.
That's no secret, bro. With all due respect to RZA, there ain't no secret out there. Everybody in this circle know RZA tap dancing for them Jews. But it is what it is. I mean, that honestly, to be honest with you, that's part of the game. That's why when I came back, I got me a business partner. See, he know how to play that game. I don't know how to play that game, and everybody that around knows I don't. So I'm the dude that just come in, and he'll come in, he'll wear the suit, and talk that talk, and I'll sit there, and then when I get the set, I do what I do. But that's just part of the routine. You want to do, you know. And on top of that, I think what a lot of us have to understand, too, and maybe Dr. Eileen Bay may see, a certain significance is that, like, for those of us over, like, RZA is between 40 and 50 years of age. That generation and my generation and above, with all due respect, they kind of always wanted acceptance. It was a hip hop generation that came through and was like, oh, I don't care. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. But RZA is like almost my brother's age, in that almost 50 age range. Same thing with Jay-Z. So it's like you look at them, it's like you got to remember their generation. Again, Dr. Eileen Bay, you let me know if I'm too far off base. They wanted hugs and acceptance. So, of course, RZA, if he gets the opportunity, he's bragging about hanging with Russell Crowe. He's bragging about being around these white people. Same thing with Jay-Z. Because his generation, Jay's like 45, 46. His generation, they're like, yo, I just want to be accepted. So a lot of these brown people that get into these positions, that's what we have to remember. It was the same thing when Barack Obama was elected in office. I thought it kind of threw a monkey wrench into the conscious community because we had elders who were now at a crossroads because you, of that age, have been seeing civil rights and kind of sort of, you know, when you were young, it would have been cool to see a black president. But now you have certain knowledge and you know better, but it still is kind of cool to see a black president. So now you're stuck. What you going to talk about? You see what I'm saying? So it's like it appeared to me that that's where there was like a certain bit of divide. So I'm, you know, I grew up, you know, always looking at white people like, wow, you're great. For me, I was fortunate that I had a white best friend. I was in his home and I saw, just like Samuel L. Jackson's character said, these are some people that ain't never had an intelligent thought in their whole damn lives. So for me growing up, I was like, I'm not impressed. You see what I'm saying? Like, I would be around his family like, oh, did y'all do that? That's stupid. You know what I'm saying? So that's, so I was never impressed. I was just always like, all right, it is what it is. But someone like RZA, he comes from that generation. Yeah, he's going to shuck his job and do that tap dance and, you know, and let me, can I get, you know what I'm saying? It's what it is. But it's like, what you going to do? Same thing with Jay-Z. I can't be mad at J-Dawg. Hey, man, you always looked up to that white boy. Not to mention, if you ask my humble opinion, you're an illegitimate offspring of the Rockefellers. But anyway, you know, that's another start for another day. So,
isn't that something?
I'm not mad at RZA. Say that again?
Isn't that something?
Nah.
Well, you know, being the illegitimate child of a Rothschild, and the reason why he ends up using it, you know, yeah.
Yeah, think about it. My man Cameron, right, he had this album called Sex, Drugs, and Entertainment, and he had a makeshift NBA logo. They sued the hell out of that dude. Oh, he's not putting that up there. But now some dude can have a record label called Rockefeller, and come out talking about drugs and hustling, and don't nobody ever from the Rothschilds go, wait a second, what the heck is going on here? We don't want to be associated with this. Really? And I'm looking at people like, ain't nobody ever seen that before? If you look at Jay-Z, the older he gets, he look like an old Jewish man. Look at him. I'm serious. I'm dead real. Will Smith just looks like he's having a life sucked out of him, but Jay-Z looks like an old Jewish dude. The older he gets that little chin and all that, and it's just that broad lips and the broad nose throw people off. I'm like, look at the dude. He looked like an old Jewish guy. And again, really, Rockefeller, I can use your name to say, well, I bet you, give me another quote-unquote Illuminati name, and I guarantee you I cannot be walking around this joint calling my group the George W. Bushes, and we talking about hustling and busting guns. Guarantee I couldn't do
it. Right,
but Jay-Z can do the Rockefeller. All I'm saying is look into it, and he's of use. You know, he's of use, and I ain't mad at him.
I like
trust me, on Rap City, I've seen a lot, too. That's another thing people don't understand about me. I've seen a lot. You know what I'm saying? I've been fortunate. I've stood next to the Wizards of Oz, like behind the curtain, the little scraggly, weak Wizards who everyone's scared of. I've stood there and been like, wow, you're doing that. And they actually believe it.
Supposedly, I don't know, like one of the Munchkins killed themselves on set or something. Was that supposedly true?
I looked at the scene, and you do see some guy hanging, so I think it really happened. Mm-hmm. Because I was into that like 5 years ago. I was into Frank's old bomb real heavy. And I actually looked on it up. But, you know, so it's like I've been fortunate, like how it compares to the industry and what's going on. It's like, nah, this really goes on. Like, I've been on sets. And that's why I used to, I remember one time Professor Griff had issues with this dude. And I don't want to blow the dude's name up because we don't have no drama. But he had issues with some guy that called him out on something that said Griff's doing something else homosexual. It's a dude that has, and he's known, and Griff was ready to go to war. Now, you know, I normally mind my business, but knowing TV and film like I do, Griff is an artist. So he's not really privy to behind the scenes. You dig what I'm saying? So it was like if he came to Rap City, Professor Griff ain't telling me what, he ain't telling me nothing. I'm walking on set, I'm like, yo, Griff, this is what we doing. You understand, when I was on Rap City, I stayed putting subliminal messages in my shows. If me and Eileen Bay knew each other back then, I'd have called Eileen like, oh, we got Rock Candy, your favorite rapper. I'm going to spell your name out throughout the show. I used to do it all the time. So I know this goes on. I used to do it all the time. So with this dude that he was beefing about, the guy had all these pictures. So I called Griff and said, look, man, before you jump out the window, wait a second. Think about it. Who in their right mind in this day and age has the time to sit down, look at a Rihanna video, and go, right there is the Rain Man. And then here, you see, no, I love your, I said, first of all, Griff, I've worked on sets with some of the biggest field directors, dog. I know for a fact that that's a lighting thing, baby. So if someone can sit there and tell you this, that, and the other, you need to ask, my man, where you getting all this information from? Where you getting it from? Like, stuff that this dude will be breaking down is like, this is stuff that the only person would know if they're working set design, if they're doing the storyboard. There's a whole lot of facets that go to these projects. And I told Griff, before you get on this dude, ask yourself, why would he know this information? That's some agent shit. So we had a lot of dudes on some agents coming in the game talking. I would just listen and be like, yo, how you know that, son? And I would ask them, and they would never have an answer for me. Because I can tell you, I've been on sets. You know, I can show you my time. I can show, but I've never seen none of these dudes on set. So I'm like, who's giving you this information? How are you making money, homie? Because the editing is a very tedious process. And just because you misspell their T-H-I-E-R-E-I-R or whatever it's spelled with T-H-E-R, that's an obvious stupid mistake. That's a mistake so that someone would think that you're some novice, but anybody that really is into the game knows, like, you did that on purpose. So, you know, a lot of these cats would talk about this stuff, and it's like, nah, it was coming from the industry. They were being commissioned, like, yo, here, you go talk this because it throws everybody else off. And, you know, and so, you know, the entertainment industry is very deep. And then people need to really kind of sort of, instead of looking at for entertainment, understand how you have a country that's in a recession, but every year you got 20 Hollywood films being produced at a minimum of like $50, $60 million. But we're in a recession? We closing businesses down, but we just had a $100 million movie made. Spider-Man just came out, and that was made a year ago. And that movie cost about $100 million to make. Well, shoot, take some of the Hollywood money and put it into the economy. But they won't do that. You'll be broke, but you'll be entertained. So, you know, it's insane through a film like Django. That's why I didn't want to give it a time of day in the beginning until I saw black people, brown people. So I'm teaching myself not to call brown people black anymore. So I saw them all up in arms.
No doubt. Matter of fact, my man, Original Titan in the back, he goes in and he said, don't forget about the slavers trying to punish Broomhilda by burning her by her eye. You know, matter of fact,
please,
Jamie
tell us about that.
Matter of fact, remember, she had the mark on her near her right eye, and Jamie had the mark near his left eye.
On his left eye.
Symbolic to Yahudi and Heru. Now, it says, I think that the symbolism on how the powers to be are trying to shut down and calcify the third eye. That's what he goes into, because he said the third eye also is the color of burgundy. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Now, the letter that they use is Ra. Oh, but yet the R sound is the letter Ra, or the letter R, in which that is on the eye, symbolic to supposedly who their quote unquote master was. You know what I'm saying? But the R also symbolizes, you know, Ra. You know, and the fact of that connection of the third eye and Ra is substantial. You know, because, you know, it's the all seeing eye, and the all seeing eye is the symbol of Ra. You know, as, you know, those who study Egyptology or Kemetology knows, you know. So, you know, I wanted to get back to that right quick, you know, as we was, you know,
no,
as we going through
point.
These movies. And I would like to go to the phone lines right quick, too.
Yes.
Let's go here. We have area code 540. Area code 540, you're on the line. Peace.
Peace.
540. Area code 540, you're on the line. All right, we're going to go to area code 708. Area code 708, you're on the line.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Peace.
Oh, good. What's good, bro? Calling from Chicago, man, and literally, I was talking to my homegirl today. We was breaking it down. And one of the things we was talking about was, like, in the beginning scene, how, like, during, like, frat rituals, how they was walking the slaves in.
Right.
And then dude got his freedom, and he let them go.
Right.
But then,
that's amazing. So they come in with the scene, walking behind each other, like the Greeks. Right.
Right. Exactly. Check it out. Another thing too. We was talking about how, okay, I didn't know this originally, but Hollywood is referred to as Candyland.
Right.
So when my girl was breaking it down to me, she was making references like, okay, if you go through all the actors and break them down on a zodiac level, using, like, the cosmophysics, astrology, the Saturn, which governs the part of the mouth or the teeth, which is Christoph Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
But also Saturn's color is gray, which is also a Masonic, like a Masonic color as well.
Right.
So
and Dr. Schultz, in which that, he wore gray throughout the whole movie.
Exactly.
You know,
he did. If you look at his birth date, his birthday is important because he's a Libra. And what was he speaking throughout the whole movie? He was speaking legalese. He was always talking about, you know what I'm saying, technicalities and et cetera, as far as
right,
the law, blah, blah, blah.
Right, justice, right. And how he was working for, the, you know, as the lawman, right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, when they was riding through the, remember the very first scene when he was like, it's a nigga on the horse.
Right.
Did you see
that nigga on the back?
But did you see the goats walk in front of the in front of them too?
Yeah,
remember, you know the goat
right.
is a Masonic
right,
is a Masonic.
Right,
what's it called it?
Right, riding
when
the goat.
Dude,
exactly.
When
the goat.
When he shot Big Daddy, and this is what my homegirl said. She was like, ah, that makes sense. When he shot Big Daddy, what did he say? He said the kid is a natural. Kid is a
right.
baby goat.
Kid is a baby goat. Right.
But
see, that goes back
so,
to what I was saying about Jamie picking out for the first time his own clothes, and he picks out the color blue, in which that, you
blue.
Know, in which that
yep.
is the first 3 degrees of Freemasonry, you know, the inter-apprentice, the fellow craftsman, and the master mason, you know what I'm saying? And you see him with that blue on, you know, but, you know, like you said, he get ushered in as a Greek, then by the time he picks his clothes out, he becomes a Mason, a Freemason, hence he gathered the name Freeman at the end of his name, Django Freeman, mm-hmm. and then by the end of the movie, he said, I look good in burgundy, hence becomes a Moor.
Right,
so
like at the end
the
of the movie.
Mm. You know what I'm saying, from the mentality that we're going to have to make from the Greek to Masonry to Moor.
Right, like at the end of the movie, he was like, man, I didn't even know burgundy was my color.
That's right.
He should have said that, too. He should have said it. But then what killed me, because I watched it again today for like the fourth time, Sam Jack at the end was like, what you think? You can't never burn down Candyland. We've been here. We always going to be here. It ain't never going nowhere.
Right.
And I was like, wow. But then what did he do? He burned it up.
He burned that shit. But remember,
so
remember the song by P.E.?
Burn,
and Ice Cube, it was called Burn, Hollywood Burn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we played it like 3 weeks ago on the beginning of your show.
That's right, and I'm going to play it again when we close out tonight.
But here's my question. I want to know if anybody can answer this. Remember
right.
when Django had the mask on, when you first seen him with the iron mask, and he was like, man, we don't want no niggas with sand. He said, you got a lot of sand, Django. We don't like niggas with sand. What does that mean? I know it means something.
Right.
Ooh.
Right.
But we trying to figure that out, the sand part.
Well, that's the reference, once again, to sand in my eye. It's an eye reference.
Oh.
Right. The Sandman go to sleep. You know what I'm saying?
They don't want those. They want a consciousness. Yeah.
Right. So basically what they was talking about was the different states of consciousness. That's what they was talking about, basically, the different states.
And that's why they kept telling him throughout the movie, you ain't, like, no regular slave or whatever, because
right.
everyone kept acknowledging, like, your level. And you could almost see with the – that's what I was saying in the beginning with Django, whatever his name is, that it was almost like they illuminated him to a certain extent over everybody else. So even when he was in line with the rest of the slaves, immediately you just drew right to him and everybody, and they kept acknowledging that. That was a good pickup, too, with the sand in your eye joint.
Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, what was very, very key to me was, like y'all said it, they opened the cage for these cats, and them cats stayed right there. They didn't even move. I didn't even see the ending part till I had the privy of having it in my hand and watched it. And I finally watched it today, and I was like, wow, they even put that in the end, that we going to open the door for y'all, and y'all still ain't going to move. Y'all going to sit there and be content.
Right, and
dude,
that's
you know, fine, though.
And that's the thing in which that is going on, you know what I'm saying, right now, you know, is the fact that the Moors are opening up, you know, these different venues, and the masses aren't coming. They aren't coming.
But you know what
they,
I got out of that, too,
like,
though?
They're just like the slaves, like you said, sitting there wanting to be caged up,
but
leaving the door
open. But you know what I got out of that?
Loopholes. Go ahead.
But there was one thing, though, that they did do that as correct as everything you guys are saying about that. Remember, though, I think, to me, I took it as that they were saying that there's symbolically there was one person in that drug that was a symbol of hope. Because remember that one slave that just kept eyeballing Django?
Right,
and
right.
He had to go wow. off on him. He was
that's
the
right.
same slave at the end that was admiring him, like, okay,
that's
so
right.
in a sense,
wow.
you could take it like that. But also,
right.
you could also take that in the sense of them of it being said, like, but eventually, the people are going to notice who you are and be like, okay. Because
right.
I guarantee you, he got out that joint later on and got busy.
So
no it was almost like exactly what you're saying, but at the same time, there was three of them, and one out of every three is going to go, okay, I see what
right.
you're about.
Right.
He's going
to
get
fact,
it. And that's kind
of
what I got.
Right, and to me, he symbolized like the Nat Turner, you know, the smile, the little smirk that he gave him, you know, as
yeah.
Jamie, you know, jumped on the horse and was riding back to the plantation, you know, to get his woman, you know what I'm saying? He had like a little smirk on his face, like, yeah.
yeah, and that was, this, in like a conversation like this is all I really would ever ask brown people who feel a certain sort of way. It's like, you know, I understand it. I have the empathy for it. You have the right to. But just listen to those of us who have watched the movie. And then go see it yourself. Well, I'll give you the joints. You can watch it for free. And then just have dialogue. But it's like, it seems to me that that upon the masses, it's either this or that. There is no in between.
I could feel you on that, too. I'm not the
yeah,
touch
no,
of wisdom, but I could feel you on that too, because I'm a avid movie watcher, and I feel you. There's one particular movie theater I go to because I get the hookup with the passes. I'm always going. My movie of the year that hit me the hardest that I love was Looper, right? The Django was very good, though. It was very entertaining. I've seen the symbolism behind it. I relate just like you did on the fact that we ain't seen no brother go hard on Whitey like this. And at the end of the day, walk victorious with the girl. We ain't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, Blade never had a girl, so he never got the girl. So
right, so
Blade.
Right.
Blade was the last thing
right,
that was like
right,
that.
Right, right. So this is a step up, you know what I'm saying? You know, at least, you know, the brother walked away with the girl whose last name is Washington, symbolic to Washitor. You see what I'm saying?
Ooh.
So I don't
oh,
think
that's...
Oh,
wow,
I
didn't pick that up.
Yeah, because I think that's why she was picked in that particular role of cast, because it's symbolic to Washitor. You know what I'm saying? Because her last name is Washington, and anyone knows that the Emperor's been telling us for, you know, 40, you know, going on 50-some-odd years that the names of the indigenous people was changed from Washitor to Washington.
Wow. And you know what's interesting about that, why you're so correct, Rob? Because I'm going to tell you, and I've said it, I've been saying it for 5-6 years, where I got number love for Carrie, but I'm telling you, Dr. Eileen Bay, when I was dating her best friend, I would see this average bra, and there was nothing special about Carrie. I was there when she, when we went to, we was in Brooklyn outside, I forget the School of Arts, to prepare her first film, Love, Our Song, and I watched her perform, and I was kind of like, eh, and I'm thinking, like, she sucks. Then I remember she first got her first role in that dance movie, and I'm looking at the movie like, you're not from the streets. And so I kept saying to myself, Carrie, what the heck did you do in Hollywood? Because they're giving you every, like, any poignant role when they need the woman. I'm looking at Carrie like, and I'm like, yo, either I'm completely blind when it comes to talent, which I don't think I am, or Shorty's out there, whatever it was that she needed to do, Carrie did it. Carrie did whatever they wanted
somebody,
her to do, because I'm looking at
somebody
short,
say
like,
something
no.
about Scandal, because Scandal is so heavy. It's like, even I can't wait to see Scandal, the episodes, because they're like, man, they dropping it heavy in Scandal.
Mm.
They
like,
drop
Scandal
heavy
make it good?
In Scandal.
Yeah, good. As a matter of fact, she has the lead role in the TV show Scandals. That's what the brother
yes,
is talking
sir.
About.
Yes. And it takes
yeah,
place in Washington
yeah.
as well.
Mm.
Wow.
But she,
with her
but
name
again,
being last name Washington.
Right.
But, you know, again, real quick, Dr. Eileen Bay, what I'll be saying, now the dude that plays opposite her, Laz Alonso, that's my man. We used to sit around in our early days when we was in that same class. It's just that, you know, he would always talk about he's going to get to Hollywood, and I was like, I'm going to be directing, and we used to sit every morning in this daydream, but we just had to take two separate walks.
Right.
Like, so again, I'm looking at some of the cast who was in my class, and I'm like, yo, like, y'all are doing it. On one level, I'm proud of you, but on another level, I'm looking and going like, okay, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's interesting what's going on here. And you know, and that joint is very interesting. When I saw Laz was in it, I was like, well, maybe I'll check it out one day. But, you know, I think at some point, though, we have to kind of sort of get moved past. I just have a thing with the entertainment industry. You know,
right.
I just did because it's like it, because we become dependent upon it, dependent on it. Like
right.
It's cool to have these convos and Django. The only reason why I stepped out of my realm because you know, brother, you ain't never heard me break down a movie before, even get involved in a joint because I'm not into it. Like yo, I'm not. But that movie to me caused such controversy amongst brown people. I'm just kind of tired of it. It's almost like the white boy can come in the black community and go digga digga doll, and next you know we're still arguing with each other over it. And it's like, well, why am I arguing with you over this cracker? Like,
right.
That's his movie that he made. Like, I'm not going to sit here and disagree with you all. You didn't like it. I liked it. But at some point, it's like, can we just like the brother said, can we just listen? Because
right.
Obviously all of us here, you know, are seeing something. So are we the crazy ones? I don't think that we are.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure if we had this convo, Quentin, Reginald, and every executive Hollywood producer would sit there going, these guys are correct. Now, I'm interested to see what Reginald and Quentin are going to be able to do after this. Because it's true
right.
to make this. But I remember, like I said about Wesley Snipes and Blade, in my humble opinion, that's what got him in trouble. Not him trying to evade taxes. It's just that those money lenders, when he did the first Blade, all they see is money. They gave him the money without realizing what he was doing. And then they came back and looked at the third one when he started dealing with mythology and said, wait a minute. He done killed every white person and staged a black baby and then killed 20 white people. Even in the last one, I tell people in the very beginning, Blade Stone Cold killed a white boy. That white boy said, I'm not even a vampire. Blade was like, so what? And stabbed him and shot him and killed him and walked off. And I'm like, and in my humble opinion, that's what got Wesley in trouble with the powers that be. Because they said, this nigga done put out three movies where he don't keep killing white people wholesale under the guise of being a vampire. And
right.
and I'm interested to see, you know, what's going to happen with Reginald and Quentin Tarantino? Because I don't think those in power wanted it to be like this.
Right.
I don't think they wanted it to be like this. I guarantee you, when they saw it, it was like, because they hyped it up so much that you couldn't take that film and go, nah, we got to do re-edits, because it was throwing you 6-8 months behind from when you needed to release it. So they give them the film, the execs go sit in there and watch the dailies, and they're like, yo, what the hell is this shit?
Right. Well, the reason why we say that was symbolic, Django is Shango, which is Heru, is because they did it on Jesus' birthday, December the 25th,
yes.
is when they released
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
So we know
yeah,
the correlation right. between that. That's when, like I said earlier, is when the sun comes and rises from out of the tomb. That's just like Hiram Abiff with the masonry being resurrected at a 90-degree perpendicular level. That's what that is all symbolic to, and that's the
yes,
symbolic
sir.
To the resurrection. You know what I'm saying? The sun, solar energy being resurrected, as well as also the black man, who's you know, the brown or no more, being symbolic to him also resurrecting and coming back into his own. And that's what, and everybody knows that the indigenous people around the planet have been saying this for years now, that we are going into a higher dimension. In other words, we are going to ascend, and it's going to be during the age of Aquarius. And it's going to be during the time when a galactical alignment is going to take place. The Mayans said it. The Olmec said it. The Dogon said it. The Aborigines from out of Australia said it. Africans been saying it for eons. So, I mean, you know, you go to Credo Mutuar. You know, he has
Credo Mutuar. Yes.
Right. So
yeah.
I mean, you know, we know that this whole thing is based on that. Now, I do have to speak about what are the political ramifications of it, though. Like what you were talking
yes.
about, I know that's what you was getting at, you know, and the political ramifications, as we were saying, you know, about with Blade and Wesley Snipes, and like you said, with Reginald Hutland, and maybe with, you know, with the guy, you know, the writer, you know.
Yeah, the white boy.
Yeah, what's his name?
Tarantino.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino. You know, what might happen, you know, after now, you know what I'm saying? You know, but the thing is that, even Minister Farrakhan spoke about this, you know, last week about under the guise of also creating a race war or civil war in this country, and that movie being utilized in order to create that.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it does is create the fear within white folks is that we're going to do to
yep.
them, you know, what they have done to us in history. And so, therefore, you know, that's the reason why they even put together white supremacy, is to try to indoctrinate us and, you know, mind control us through subliminal messages and even overt, you know, not just subvert, but overt, you know. And so, you know, it's all tied in is that, you know, if this society's money finances collapse, you know, and people can't find food,
You know, and we know that, you know, these are some of the things in which that might take place. I know a brother who told me that he was getting ready to get strung up by the Klan, you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
You know, and he told him, you know, that he was a Moor. And the Klan, you know, and the Klansmen, you know, yelled back at the other Klansmen and told him, said, yo, he's not a nigger, he's a Moor. Put him down, release him. Now,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, and now this brother is 88 years old and has no reason to lie to me, about it. You know what I'm saying? He's 88 years old. You know, matter of fact, he rolls all the time. You know, he rolled with Romani Aminu Il, who wrote the book Negro Black the Moor. You know, and so, you know, we need to, you know, definitely analyze what, you know, what they're talking about, you know, because there's still a connection, you know, in which that we haven't, you know, quite mastered yet, and that's still between Moors and Freemasonry, you know, and there's something going on, you know, because we done had too many instances of the European or Albion walking up to the brothers saying that they're glad that we are waking up, you know, and that they are,
yeah.
You know, and so this awakening is part of that, you know, part of that same scenario, you know what I'm saying? But we have to make sure that we know on what side that we on, if we want to stay Negro, Black, and colored, or if we're going to make that transition, you know, and
that's why I'm training myself to stop saying Black.
Right. And, well, and also put forth, you know, like what Jamie, you know, like they was talking about, like you said, they talked an awful lot about paperwork in that movie.
Yes.
You know, what is known as
yes.
freedom papers. They kept saying freedom papers over and over again. So it's no coincidence that, you know, for the people who do reclamations and nationality, that people often call and say that they want their freedom papers.
Now, you know what's interesting about all that, what you just pointed out, is that in actuality, and we just forgot that we all got to talk about it, they made that a central part of a major scene. Remember,
right.
Like, remember when he told Django that story about, you know, so-and-so, for 30 years, five times a week for 30 years, such-and-such would shave my daddy with a straight razor.
Right.
And I always wondered why he just didn't kill him.
Yep.
And so you feel what I'm saying? So they actually put that in that joint. Like, think about it.
Right.
They didn't make it in passing. That was a scene where you're sitting there sucked in. It's like, yeah, like, why don't they kill him? And then
right.
you give it to that part of the brain joint. But they gave him the close-up, the medium shot and everything for that scene. That's why I knew that the brain thing wasn't really, that wasn't about the brain scene because it was a wide shot. But when he
right.
was talking about, I always wonder why y'all never would just kill us, they gave him a medium shot or a close-up.
Right.
And I was just thinking, like, wow, like, I wanted anybody in that theater to get that. Now, my homeboy said where he went, he said, that scene, them crackers was quiet in the mug in that theater.
Right.
He said, them crackers, that theater was quiet in the mug. Like, he said, he was looking around, it was just him, like, maybe seven other black people. He said,
right.
we're all
you know what?
Games.
But that goes back to the scene, you know, that goes back to the scene with the KKK, you know, with the beginning stages of the KKK. And Don Johnson, you know, playing Big Daddy. You know, and of course, you know, in that particular role, I think that he actually was symbolically playing Albert Pike, you know.
Wow.
And the reason why I say
wow.
that is because of the fact is, you know, is that if you notice, that was just the beginning stages of the Ku Klux Klan. You know, they were
yeah.
wearing sacks. And then one of them said, you know, next time we'll wear the, you know,
that's
wear the full regalia.
Scene.
You know, the full regalia. Right. You know, and of course, you know, we know what that means, you know, if you, you know, riding with the KKK, but obviously that was the origin because that was the first time that they used the sacks or the bags on their head.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And
that's
why they
made comedy of it.
Right. That's why, you know, they was like, man, I can't see shit in this thing. You know, cut this shit off. You know? You know, so
that was probably one of the funniest scenes in the movie,
right.
though, to me.
That
I
was
dying
yeah.
laughing over that.
That
joint.
Was one. That was the funniest scene. But that's the reason why I said Big Daddy symbolized, in a sense, Albert Pike. Who became right, who became the you know, who was a general, but became the Southern, you know, who became the head mason of the Southern jurisdiction. You know what I'm saying? Of Scottish rights. And he also wrote anyone who knows this, wrote for the Prince Hall affiliation, also wrote the rituals for them.
That I didn't
know. Prince Hall. Right. He wrote some of the rituals for the Prince Hall. And there's no coincidence that in Washington, D.C., they have a statue dedicated to Albert Pike to this very day. You know, who was the founder, one of the founders of the KKK. So that was, you know, that was also symbolic to that. You know what I'm saying? And matter of fact, Forrest Gump in the movie was named after Henry Forrest, who was also a co-founder of the KKK.
Okay. That's,
you know what I'm saying?
I definitely didn't know.
You know
well,
what I'm
saying? Glad that we're having this convo because I've been feeling like maybe I've been losing my touch on blackness for the past week and a half the way black people, them brown people coming at me. I'm kind of like, yo, am I tripping? Am I like, I've actually started questioning myself like, dang, Dave, are you losing it? You getting soft? Because I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about something like, I'm seeing all this symbolism, but everyone else is telling me that I'm tripping.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I'm like, you know, I'm thinking maybe I'm starting to sell out or something. I'm like, dang, son, you starting to sell out? But
now, what it is, like you said, we had to make a determination when we go and see it, if we're going to use our rational mental mind or if we're going to, you know, be emotional. And I chose not to be emotional. I wanted to see the symbolism because I know it was going to have some serious symbolism in it if they're pumping this thing up and they're going to bring it out on Christmas Day.
Yeah, and it was just like, you know, but even then, though, here, the question I have for you now, when you went in there, did after you was about an hour or so on the film, did you even see anything that even if you went in there emotional that would have had you on edge?
No.
Well, when I,
not me, you know, but I seen, you know, the way in which that, you know, I noticed the way that the German, you know, Dr. Schultz, and, you know, it's no coincidence that he was named Dr. Schultz after, you know, Charles Schultz, you know, character, you know, who did the, you know, Snoopy and all of them, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, I don't
That's
think
crazy.
That was right. I don't think that was a coincidence with them using that name either. You know, so
wow,
you know,
I see that one right there. That's a good one.
Right, you know, so Schultz, you know, happened to be that name that they wanted to use, and that connection. But you know, I don't think it was no coincidence. You know that he was, you know, this, you know, in a sense, in the first part, you know, the teacher. You know, because that goes to what Prophet Noble Drew Ali was saying, is that I will leave the European here long enough in order to teach you government. And that's what he was
right.
doing. He was teaching Jamie the science of law.
Yes, he was.
All right? Right, remember that. That's what he was doing. He was teaching him justice, law. All right? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, the Old Testament type of shit now. Okay?
Yeah, he really was.
Right, right. He wasn't teaching him turn the other cheek shit. You know, you see how Jamie got, you know, with the turn the other cheek shit. You know what I'm saying? When the dude was touching his stuff, you know what I'm saying? Jamie made sure that he said, you know, that he was one of the ones that he saved for last. And talking
yeah,
shit while he was
him.
And talk right and
oh,
talking
yeah.
shit. Right, and talking shit while
yeah.
he was showing him.
Yeah, shot him in the balls twice. Not
exactly.
once, twice.
Exactly.
You know, but that's the thing I think that like what happens in nowadays that if people are going to get in, brown people are going to involve themselves in Hollywood, it's like, you know, start looking at the credits. And if you see a brother behind as a producer or as the screenplay writer, kind of sit back. And I speak from personal experience because my cousin, my second cousin's name is Michael G. Moy. And he wrote Good Time, Jefferson, Sanford and Son, Different Strokes. And it was funny because as a child growing up, I would always see black symbology. Like, if you go look at old Sanford and Son episodes where Fred had a fez, and Fred had one episode, he had a picture of a Morris, of a Sultan, that was all my cousin. So that's what made hit me to know, like, yo, you know what, sometimes these brothers try to slide something in real quick.
Oh, they did, because even on there, remember, they even added in that Fred said that we was the original Jews, we was the black Jews.
Yeah. And my cousin wrote that episode. My cousin wrote
that.
I haven't talked to him in years.
That's what I'm saying. And what about the scene when Fred was in the courtroom and he had the police up on the stand and he said, wait, you don't, how he said that shit? He said, do you arrest any, you know, anybody else other than people, you know, that, I think he said something like, you know, anybody else of people of color? And he said, sure I do. You know what I'm saying? He said, well, where the heck? It looked like, damn, there's enough niggas that hit the damn door. I'm just damn trying to damn movie.
Yeah, and it's like, so we got to pay attention to that. And that's
right.
The thing with this movie is that, in reality, what Reginald Hudlin gave was a stone-cold superhero.
Right.
That's what he gave. I said, my man walked away with a cigarette and whole nine. I was like, he ain't had a scratch on. Told him, they come on, man, let's go.
Yep.
He out. I'm like, what
shit
more could you
and
really
even danced the horse around a little bit before they jetted.
Forgot about that. I'm sorry. I forgot all about that. I'm
yeah.
like, so, you know, I just,
they,
but
they,
I think what happened
in,
is.
You mean, so.
Say that again?
But you know the one I want to ask you, Dr. Eileen, is what do you think about, like, I looked at Samuel Jackson's character on a very mundane level as what's my man's name? Set. That's who I saw him as.
Right.
On a very lower level without going extra deep on my end because
right.
I'm lazy. But I looked at him and I was like, in particular, a lot of the things that he was doing with him verbally and so forth and so on, and I was just kind of like, you know, like, for instance, I know, and I haven't figured it out yet, but it had to be a science by the six shooter, because when he said, I counted six shots, nigga. And Jerry Fox said, I count two guns, nigga. So I'm like, okay, so in my mind, I'm thinking, what's the significance here? And I knew there was a significance, but I'm like, at that point, I was like, all right, I'm going to figure this out. There was so much going on in that joint that I'm like, they just were giving a whole lot of stuff that I thought was fun and interesting.
Right. Right. What I think that correlates to, you know, is the 6 ounces of brain in which that is stated that the European has. You know what I'm saying? So the fact was that Samuel Jackson was using only six ounces of his brain, you know, in response to Jamie, and Jamie said, no, there's 12. In other words, he was using 12 strands of DNA.
Yep. Wow.
You see what I'm saying? Right. So, you know, that's what we was talking about earlier about the indigo children or the rainbow or the crystal children. How, you know, how they begin to start using more than just 2 strands of DNA. They would develop 12. So Jamie said, nah, it's 12 up in here. You see what I'm saying? In other words, his 12 pairs of cranial nerves also was activated symbolically to 12 pair, and pair meaning 2. So 12 pair, you know, 12 times 2 is 24. In other words, as in the 24 elders, you know, that sits around the throne of God, which is symbolic to the pineal gland, the lamb. You know what I'm saying? So I think all of that was symbolic up in it, and how we know is because he said burgundy once again, which is the color of the third eye.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or what is known as maroon or burgundy or indigo. It's indigo children once again. But I got 2 callers that's going to – I'm going to bring on. Let me see. We got some questions. We got area code 747. Area code 747.
Damn. Yeah, peace.
Peace.
I just want to know what your thoughts is on the type of dialogue that Jamie Foxx was using in the movie. Like, do you think he sounded like an unintelligent? Because I'm having a conversation with my homegirl about the movie. She's saying she didn't think that he sounded like, she didn't agree that he was using correct dialogue that was appropriate for that time.
Right. Well, remember,
man, and things like that. So, which, I just want to know what your thoughts.
Right. Well, I mean, of course, you know, some people would rather that he talk like a slave. But remember, Jamie is from the South. Jamie was born and raised in Texas, so
right.
The accent itself is Southern. Okay. Now,
yeah.
The epithets in which that he used might not have necessarily been, but he was showing you how he have gone above the language barrier in a dialect of the Southern of the Southerners. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Another of those who that's why they kept emphasizing the language barrier. Remember when they rolled up before the guy got eaten by the dogs, you know, before the black, you know, the right. Remember the guy he was talking to, he was asking him, he said, how long you been going? He said, well, something
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then he was like, well, what you want us to do? I'm going home. You know, so
so
that's why the emphasis was on the language, because they were showing you, you know what I'm saying, that this is how the Southerners during that time talk, because they was illiterate, you know what I'm saying? Over 90% of the country was illiterate 400 years ago, 300 years ago, 200 years ago, okay?
Of the country?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And also what he was showing was that he was not Negro, black, or colored.
Bingo.
He was a the sister sounded so ghetto.
Yeah.
Didn't the sister sound so ghetto when she was like, he's over yonder? She sounded so ghetto. He wasn't on that vibe. He was a god.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Remember,
exactly.
He had to remind ghetto girl that he was not a slave.
Sure did.
She didn't believe it.
Right.
He didn't ask to kill the brothers when when the germ man came over there. They was already dead.
Right. He did it on his own. He killed the first two and then let the German join in, you know, with killing the third one, you know. And
right.
He had to say, well, yeah, that's him. He said, what you mean? Are you positive? He said, what positive mean? You know, this was about being positive, goddammit. It was about damn making sure. And he said, well, it means sure. He said, oh, well, yeah, I'm sure that that motherfucker right there.
After I watched it, I did have to go to my mother who was born down south because I swear to you, I learned something in that film. I said, Mama, what the heck is a nag? I said, they call horses nags. She's like, yeah, a nag is a third for a whole horse.
Because
when Samuel said it, I said, what the heck is he like? What the heck is he doing on that nag? And that's what I was telling people about Samuel's character. I said, if you didn't see it, yeah, someone would tell you that he was the step in session. No, he wasn't. He ran that plantation. The white boy was listening to everything he said. As a matter of fact, the candy, whatever his name is, he had to actually stand up and stick his chest out before Samuel shut up. I said, in the very beginning, if you listen to the dialogue, Samuel's character was playing him out. He said, oh, did you miss me? He said all this stuff, but the very last thing he said is like a rocket, a pebble in my shoe I miss you. And he just was pissing him the whole time.
And see, the thing about Candy was that if you notice his ring, he was wearing a Masonic ring.
Yes.
There was a copy of a square and a G on that ring. They showed it for just one or two quick seconds, and that was it. Okay?
Yeah.
So Samuel's ring?
No, that was Leo DiCaprio ring. Now, when he got up, he did the fidelity sign, if you notice, when he left the table. He put his hand over his
Olaplex
as he was leaving the table. And he was going to go and talk to who? Samuel Jackson, who was Stephen or Stephen. Hence, Stephen and Step and Fetch It. Okay?
Yep.
That's the reason why he was given that name, Stephen. Okay?
So he goes to...
Right. So he goes to the library now. This is where they go to now, is in this library where the lies are buried at. As a matter of fact, that's where Leo Caprio, Mr. Candy, was dead at. Killed at. Was in the library. Along with his history, his story. And what was told to him before his story, or before his murder, or assassination, was that Dear Moss, all right, who wrote the book on, or wrote the story on the Three Musketeers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now remember, in the beginning they had to kill the Brittle brothers, who's three of them, the Shakers, and then at the end they go into the Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Now the Three Musketeers was written by Alexander Dumas, and he tells them that Alexander Dumas was who? Black.
He was black.
Tells them this.
Yeah.
So he was telling him that his whole lies, where the lies are buried at, I'm going to dig it up. His favorite book, the name that he gave to the slave, which was Alexander. That's who the slave who was eaten by the dog's name was Alexander.
Yeah.
And that's what made him feel so bad about what took place. And then the Germans shot his ass right there where the lies are buried at, and then revealed to him the goddamn truth. And was willing to die. And was
willing to
die for it.
Wow.
Willing to die for it, because he knew that's what was getting ready to come. And he turned around and said, look, I couldn't resist. Shit.
Wow.
And,
Here's thing for all the people that are still into the entertainment aspect of it. Here's a little thing that I found out from behind the scenes. What I found interesting, I remember as a filmmaker, I thought to myself, that's a very interesting choice, because when they were at the table, when Leonardo was finding out that they were, after he found out that they had duped him when he slammed his hand on the table, I said, wow, they made him cut his hand. What's that about? And as I'm watching them more, I'm like, wow, they're going to really just keep the blood flowing. Well, word is, and now I know why Kerry Washington did such a wonderful job in that scene, was that what the producers of the film said, that Leonardo was so in the character that when he slammed his head on the table, he really did give himself a gash when he had, after he left, he had to get 10 stitches. So what happened was he really smeared his blood in Kerry Washington's face. That's why Kerry was looking so crazy. When she, like, go back and look at her look, because I was like, yo, that's some gashy. But
So they
said, first of all, that wasn't even part of the scene. He was not supposed to grab her head or anything. But as an actor, I can understand you getting the moment. But so I looked at that, because I was thinking, like, well, that's an interesting choice as a filmmaker. Like, what was the significance of him cutting his hand? But apparently, according to what the producer said, that, nah, he really cut his hand, and that was his blood that he smeared all over Kerry Washington's face.
I'm glad you cleared that up because I did not understand. I said, did he cut his hand when he was cutting the skull?
It was not.
What happened?
It was not supposed to be a part of the scene. He just got into it. And cause I've been there as a producer before where, like, you know, someone's so into it. Like, I remember this, like, silly story. We had LL Cool J on Rap City, and he was freestyling. I mean, LL was in a zone. Problem was, 10 seconds into his freestyle, the audio cut out. But no one stopped him because he was going. And I've seen actors get in the zone where, you know, I've done that when I was in the Negro Ensemble Company. I grabbed a girl and shook her and called her a bitch on stage. And everybody was like, but I was so into that character that's what he would have done. So I found it very interesting. And I was like, Kerry Washington is a soldier because I don't know if I would have played that spirit of blood in my face. I mean, he smeared her up with it. And I remember we was like, oh, but, you know, so there was so much going on that, like, literally probably on that set, they had a lot of esoteric things going on that maybe some people caught that was on set, maybe other people didn't.
That's
and
true.
I'll leave it at that. But I'm glad we had this because, like I said, I swear, the past week I was really questioning myself, like, yo, D, maybe you're losing it, bro. Maybe you want sellout road, homie. Maybe you tripping because back in the day that a movie like this might have had me enraged, even though I never saw it. But, you know, now I feel normal. I feel normal again.
Well, like,
you know
I said, the number 3 was used over and over again because the symbolism was triple stage darkness. The first 3 was used with them killing the 3 guys. The second 3 was with what we was just talking about. And then, of course, him leaving with the sister, symbolic to 3 or her 3 trimester periods. And, of course, them producing the next hit rule. You know what I'm saying? So it symbolized that, you know, triple stage darkness, Ein Sophie. You know what I'm saying? Which that is above Kisa, which is above the crown or the top of the head. And that's why they kept, you know, showing, you know, the head so much, the head shots, you know, the symbolism with the eyes, the head and so forth and so on, the head or the skull on the table, symbolic to Kisa. You know what I'm saying? That's where man thinks that he originate at the mind. You know what I'm saying? You know, he think the mind is all because the mind symbolizes the light. However, the light comes from out of triple stage darkness. So there's something in which that is above that, and that's what that last scene was also symbolizing. So you're not crazy, Yacht. I mean, this just, you know, just the fact of the symbolism in which that they know about, you know, studying the Kabbalah and, you know, Judaism and so forth and so on. And, you know, these people, you know, they study that. You know what I'm saying? There's no doubt about it. They study. I mean, Madonna is a known Kabbalist student. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, these are just things in which that we definitely have to check out and analyze.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I attempt to tell people all the time. It's like, look, man, I'm around some of these cats. Like, look, this conversation I'm having with you, I sat in a room full of actors and had the same exact conversation. I sat in front of people, some of people's favorite rappers and be like, yo, and they would sit right there and be right in the middle of the conversation. And it hit me like, wow, I tell people I've sat with a couple of the brown congressmen like 3 or 4 years ago. And one of the ladies worked for Hillary Clinton. And I sat right at lunch because they took, for whatever reason, they wanted me to come with them. And they paid for lunch and everything. And I told her about the DVD that I saw Ron Brown and how Ron Brown and how he really was shot. And they said, and you know, that woman sat right there. I was like, yeah, we're aware of that. You know, and we talked about it. We talked about all the conspiracy theories. So I tell people, like, yo, the people you're talking about, they're aware of it.
Right.
Now, with the Green Mile, remember after Steven Spielberg did that?
Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King. He got hit by a truck because he was making a brother a Christ figure. So you were talking about them creating this. You think they're going to be hurt too?
Yeah, I mean...
Brother D?
That's a good point.
Brother D, you there?
He might not be able to speak on that.
No, I don't know if his phone is still on.
Aleem, you know what somebody said in the chat room?
What's that?
He said you forgot to break down Yu-Gi-Oh.
Oh, well, go to it, God.
All right, well... You see, I mean, Yu-Gi-Oh, I mean, it doesn't get any more comedic than that. I mean, that starts... Did you hear that one? Did you
your sons watch that or?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah,
they watched,
we watched that.
Yeah, they watched it, no doubt.
Okay, so I mean, it starts out basically. You know.
Right, go ahead, Doc.
No, what are you saying? Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it starts out with basically this character named Yugi, and, you know, his grandfather has all these artifacts and statues and Egyptian, you know, I mean, just artifacts. And there's this thing called the Millennium Puzzle. Now, basically, there was a difference between Yugi and Yu-Gi-Oh! And it was either... It was Yugi who's basically like the, Yugi is basically him as a human being. But the Pharaoh, I think, was Yu-Gi-Oh, which was basically came out of the Millennium Puzzle. And as you see that, I mean, I used to rock that when I was, you know, really young. I didn't even know what it meant. But, that Millennium Puzzle, which, I mean, it looks like the all-seeing eye type of thing. It's the eye of Horus, and that's where Yugi comes out, and it's a pharaoh.
Mm.
Another movie that dropped science as soon as the cartoon is Last Mimsy. That joint was real deep. It had the science of Reiki, Egyptology. See, Brad, I guess I shouldn't ask this question again because you got kicked out, but I still want to. When... The movie The Green Mile came out. Y'all remember they ended up hitting the person who wrote it with a truck. Y'all remember that? Because he made the brother a Messiah.
John Coffey, J.C.
So that was directed to you, D-Bread.
You know, I can barely hear you, but I didn't see The Green Mile. I'm not a movie person, right? That's a comedy. I don't go to movies. I didn't see The Green Mile. I've never really watched it. So I definitely would have missed out on any symbolism because I think I've seen maybe 10 minutes. I think I've seen when he was blowing the flies out of his mouth.
Okay, okay. So you don't know. But that was a really good movie. It really was. It was John Coffey, which is a symbolic to the initials of Jesus Christ. And he actually was healing people through touch, which is a shaman African practice. So, yeah, it had a lot of science in it.
Yeah, it had Michael Clark Duncan in it, right? Yeah, I think this. The Green Mile?
I know, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to bring area code 314 onto the line. Peace.
Peace.
Area code 314.
Peace. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Peace.
Peace.
Yeah, brother Jimmy L. From St. Louis, Missouri Republic. Yes, I've been hearing, you know, a lot of you goddess gods and talking all about the movies and the science and up, and pretty interesting, you know. I was just glad I went. I was hoping I'd get on it earlier, you know, to kind of share a lot of this the symbolism with you. Can you still hear me? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, brother.
Okay, I don't know if everybody else can. I didn't hear. But Aleem?
Aleem, are you there?
Yeah.
All right.
Can you hear me, God?
Yeah, I didn't hear that last part. The phone are going in and out here.
The phone keep kicking off D-Brad.
Right, the phone keep kicking off Brother D-Brad, and he calls us in order to try to get back on. But I didn't hear that last part. Go ahead, brother.
Yes, sir, brother. I listened to what a lot of you brothers and sisters were talking about, how you science up on the symbology of the movies, especially Django. And I still haven't yet chance to see it. But I'm trying to see it between this week and next week. Because the more and more you talk about it, the more and more I need to go see it. And you was right. The brother was right when he said about the Masonic nature of the movie. because I'm myself a past master of 3 years. I sat in the chair for 3 years as worshipful master of my lodge, and the hat he was wearing was the hat of authority and sovereignty. You still there?
Yeah, we here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so, yes, he did have some of the previews I saw of the movie, and he did have on a lot of blue, which represents the Blue Lodge.
Right.
And that was about all I could get from the previews of it, of the movie.
Right.
But I'm glad a lot of you brothers and sisters are really talking about it, about the symbolism, and especially about Kerry Washington. I know of the sister, but I don't know her.
Right.
So,
well, that's why we brought Brother D. Brad on, because he knows her.
Well, let me clarify. She's not like, if she saw me right now, she'd be like, and you are, and I would have to be like, you remember Natalie? And back in 2000, she'd be like, oh, okay. So it ain't like, I know her, like, we tight. Let me clarify, like, you know, I've been around her before she did what she's doing.
Okay, you and the sister pretty tight, huh?
No, we're not. I dated her, my ex-girlfriend was one of her best friends. Like, we knew each other at that time back in 2000, between 2001 and 2003 when she was still in New York. And we were like, she would see me with her girlfriend and she knew me, like, oh, hey, what's going on? Because that was my girlfriend. But once she went to L.A., I ain't seen her since.
Okay.
So, you know, I was around her in her early days.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of wondering, what was the sister like, you know, off stage, you know? What are her political...
From what I knew of her before, she was, you know, I mean, as far as personality, she was cool. I just never saw anything overly special about her as a talent.
Okay.
But apparently, I was wrong. And I'm wrong sometimes. It is what it is. We all miss them. And I missed out.
Right.
I missed, you know,
right.
Carrie, because I just, you know, when she got Ray, I was like, wow, she's doing Ray. And the next thing I know, it's bigger and bigger and bigger films. And I'm thinking, I'll watch her in the films. Like, even in Django, I didn't, you know, I watched her in Ray, and I was just looking and going, all right. But, you know, obviously there's something, you know, once Hollywood likes you and there's something about you that they like, they're going to keep going with it.
Okay, right. You are right about that, Mo. Yes, sir. I was also hearing you talking about the seven, dealing with the seven chakras. And it was
yes.
going with the, yeah, with the cartoon.
Oh, yeah. I was going in on that.
Yes, I deal with the seven chakras, and you also talk about Shiva. Also, Shiva goes back to the number seven. Also,
that's
like
right.
Say, seven heaven.
That's right.
And
also the Sanskrit deity Shiva, which means seven. Yep.
Yes. Uh huh. That
just
goes take me back to the circle seven,
mm-hmm.
and so on. So the seven is a very, very powerful number.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the G in the ring, in which that Leo Caprio of Mr. Candy wore, was, you know, the square and compass with the letter G in the center, in which that is the seventh letter of the alphabet.
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
I know my grand.
Hence, you know, number one girl was Core Sheba.
Wow.
So the G symbolized actually. The compass of square actually symbolizes the vagina, you know, which is shaped, you know, like the compass and square. You know, that's why Washington, D.C. is in between Maryland and Virginia, or Virgin.
Wow.
Mary the Virgin.
I never
okay?
did.
And then what's, what's in the center of Washington, D.C. is the obelisk, the phallus, the penis.
And that's definitely not by coincidence.
No.
No, definitely not.
Huh?
I would never science that up.
Well, I've heard that that's like they tried to make a modern Egypt in there.
Right.
In Washington. So that's what that is. So
we all
probably don't know. I mean, they probably don't know what they're doing.
So we all know that Benjamin. Right. Benjamin Banneker Bay was the designer. A Moor, he was a Moor, which I believe Prince Hall was his co.
Now remember when Jamie Foxx pulled out the telescope, you know, not the telescope, but the Well, yeah, what is it?
Yeah, the joint, I forget what they call it, the little
I got to
see
that movie.
Right, when he pulled out the single binocular, and he had on his blue, so he was in the Blue Lodge, the Blue House, symbolically. You know what I'm saying? So he was the Master Mason, and he pulls out the binocular, the single binocular that looked like a telescope. That was Moorish.
Yeah.
Because the same scene was with Morgan Freeman. Now, remember, he was called Django Freeman. And in the same...
Hey, brother, real quick, if you want to see it, it's digital, bro. It's the same thing as in the theater. The site is called ZMovie.net. It's right up there. If you got a nice TV at home, you can plug your computer in, whatever, the USB joint, don't pay to go see it. I don't believe in I occupy Wall Street. I don't pay for nothing. I think things like this because, like, I work in performing arts for children, so I have a lot of time between I work with children from 11 to 16. And it's, in particular, before I got on, when you all were breaking down the cartoons, things like this are very important. Really, like, when it comes to us adults, in a way, it's kind of us just sitting around. But the real impact it will make is on those children. Because
right.
They watch all of this, like the cartoons. I will have a bunch of children sitting around me, and I ain't even go nowhere near as far as y'all did when it comes to the metaphysical breakdown of cartoons. I simplify stuff like, with the Incredible Hulk, I explain, like, if you understand the properties of chlorophyll and melanin, they're kind of sort of very similar. And after
right.
if you know the background of the Incredible Hulk and you describe his attributes, well, if someone took that cartoon away, like, oh, he's always angry and he gets mad, he blows up. I'm like, yo, who you think they talking about? I saw that little JoJo across the street, Uncle Wild ass nigga over across the street, out of control. Cops
mm-hmm.
always chasing after him. You feel what I'm saying? Like, and the thing I would explain to children with Superman, I would ask them, like, well, what's his real name? And it's when it ends in L. I forget. I think his daddy's name is Jar-El, whatever. And I would explain that from a certain amount of Morris science in that joint.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
mm-hmm.
even the cartoons where they talk about, the Transformers or Superman, they come from another planet. I'm like, that's the culmination story that the Dogons used to tell about the Anunnaki
mm-hmm.
and things of that nature. And, obviously Wonder Woman, I've seen the first Azazel has the first Wonder Woman. I've read through it. They made her jet black. And I tell the little girls, think about it. Amazon. She's from the Amazon. Amazonians are dark. Couldn't be white with jet black hair.
No
you
way.
Know, spy, you
right.
know, you said, not, you know, even something I thought I had my homegirl's son. We was in the mall when the Green Lantern was out. And she didn't know the significance of it. And I said, what's that symbol on his chest? And they were like, I was like, it's called the shin. They just superimposed two of them together. I said, and his color is green, which represents, if I'm correct, green represents creativity. That's why that ring allows him to think, to create anything he thinks of in his mind. And I was like, so every one of these suits. Go ahead. Go ahead, bro.
I was going to say something, brother. I was going to say, like, right before you said Green Lantern, like a picture just popped in my head of Green Lantern.
That's because we're on the same wavelength, B.
The green can also go back to the planet Venus.
Right.
Yes.
Dealing with the what they call the light bearer.
Right.
Well, see, you ain't have to go there with that. See what I'm saying? You remind me of I was talking to another one of my elders, Brother Kaba, and I brought the Hulk. He brought in Asur, and I said, see, you have to take it there. But I think it's important for the children to hear stuff like this. With all due respect to the grown people that may be listening, I'm not really concerned because you are where you're going to be. But them babies, when they look at Django, like I said earlier, before you got on, bro, I said, man, my daughter's 4, man. I said, if I'm going to have her watch something fictional about slavery, she will watch Django. Because I know Roots is fictional because I transcribed that whole trial of my book where Alice Haley had
uh-huh.
to admit to that white judge that he stole that story. I never had no coons in my family. So if I'm going to tell a fictional tale, let me have the hero story. Let me let my daughter see that you can get out of that.
Right.
Because Roots don't allow you. Queen don't allow you. Beloved don't allow you. So I'm like, I'd rather my daughter see this right here. I'll see it right on that. Let her watch it.
Right.
And have no problem explaining to her the significance of the slavery around it. But she would pay more attention to that brother, that Moore, that Freeman over there. And the same thing with these cartoons with Goku. Because children are into that. Like, my niece is heavy into, what's the Georgia on some of Goku, I think it was. I forget the name of the cartoon. But I sat down and watched it with her one day.
Right.
Yeah, Dragon Ball. My daughter loves My Little Pony, and I was forced when I had a stomach virus for a day, and she's four, and I put on Netflix, and that saved my life. But you know what? After about the fourth episode, I was like, yo, they're doing, like, real magic. Like,
mm-hmm.
these choices, like, for real, My Little Pony. Like, it's
mm-hmm.
not, like, I'm sitting there watching, like, yo, same thing with Tunstein. I'm like, I had to watch that, too, my daughter. I'm like, they're doing, like, real sorcery. Like, this is not a joke. You know what I'm saying? It's a
mm-hmm.
cartoon, but My Little Pony, they do so much magic in that joint that it's like, this is real. You know what I'm saying? So I think
yeah.
it's very important that we throw it at the children so that they can get it, and then they can go on and take what they're going to do with it.
Right.
And that's why I love y'all metaphysical breakdown early. That's why I was so into it, where I was like, yo, I'm content just sitting listening, because I'm like, yo, the babies need to hear this. These young teens need to hear this, because then it draws them in, and it makes them use their imagination. Because, like, I have some children that, unfortunately, their parents hit them in the head with Christianity so much that they don't see nothing.
Oh,
especially the little girls. The little boys are more apt to go, really? Let me hear. But the little girls, once mommy tell me Jesus, it's Jesus. That's all I believe in, is Jesus. And I'm like,
right,
wow.
too. Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, I was going to say, like, basically, I mean, before I even really realized what religion was, like, that was my shit. I mean, Dragon Ball. So I just lived my life accordingly. And Goku, you know, I thought maybe there could be a dragon in the sky or something. You know, but at least that was more happier. Or that was at least more interesting to me than, you know what I'm saying, a white man with a beard. So,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, and even real quick, another one who I love to get into, because is Doctor Strange. I'm like, if you've ever studied Pascal Beverly Randolph, you'll look at his photo, go look at a Doctor Strange book. I'm like, dog, they ain't do nothing but lighten his face up. He still lives in Greenwich Village. He still, I have Death to Disembodiment of Man. I have, I got like 5 Pascal Beverly Randolph books, and a lot of
wonderful.
Things that Doctor Strange does, I'm like, yo, you can look at his books and you'll see Pascal's talking about it. That's Pascal Beverly Randolph, which is why I say I think they made 2 Doctor Strange films back in the 70s, but Marvel would not do another Doctor Strange. Actually, when I was in L.A., I went to a comic book shop, because I was on this Doctor Strange kick, and it was really weird at one time, because I would go to different flea markets and find, like, every episode that was, like, right after the one I got.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude told me that Marvel had bought out in L.A., like, literally all the Doctor Strange comic books, because they were supposed to make a film. But I was like, they're not going to make that film about Doctor Strange, because that's too close to the truth. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's next? You want to make a film about Black Hermit? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these things, and the same thing, like in my book, I put the interview I transcribed with Stan Lee, who created the X-Men. Said, "Oh, I made those. That was after Black America."
Right.
He said that Professor X, the passive one, was Martin, and he said Magneto was based after Malcolm X. And I tell children that's why the only one who's indigenous would be Storm, and what are her powers? Nature.
Right.
Everyone else has built to you. She's the only one who's natural at one,
which is Oya.
So, speak on it, guy. I'm done. Go ahead.
That's right.
Yeah. The Randolph back in those days was called a mulatto. A mulatto.
Back in
those days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His works are interesting to me, because if I read them 5 times, I get 5 totally different things out of it. Which is really strange to me about his work. Like, I could not explain it to nobody, because it's like, well, I read it a month ago and I thought this, but then when I read it just now, something completely different came to me. So I love that brother. Because I don't understand.
Yes,
anybody's work, I don't understand.
Very, very deep into the cult science.
But here's the thing. Doctor Strange, I have a lot of old episodes from the issues from the 70s and 80s, and he was using that. They were literally, like, reading his stuff and going, okay, well, we're going to have Doctor Strange do this, that, and the other. We're going to have him take him here. We're going to go to this mystical. We're going to go to this. It was ill. You know, I mean, so it's like this. So I tell the children, like, even Captain America, my dad, when I was growing up, used to always tell me this story about my great-grandfather named Elijah Bradley, who was a sorcerer, and he was like, he got his talent. He said he disappeared, and there was a whole military thing. And then when I started reading on Wiki Marvel about Captain America, lo and behold, they turned this story about this black dude named Elijah Bradley, and they said, oh, yeah, he disappeared, and nobody ever knew. So I called my dad, he said, talk to me and read this. And I said, my dad ain't in the comics. By the time he finished reading, his jaw was on the floor. I said, ain't that what you used to tell me about having our great-grandfather? So I tell people, and that was based off of all the Tuskegee experiments. So it was like everything that our children see is like, nah, the same thing with Spider-Man. I was like, that black costume, people didn't even get what was going on. I tell the children, when you remember Spider-Man 3, what happened when that black costume got on? I said, Peter Parker got rhythm. He got cool. He could dance. You know what I'm saying? He had style.
The girl.
Yeah, it's just that the way they slanted the movie made us kind of look at like, oh, it's a negative. Like, nah, because I got the Secret Wars when that first happened. It was a black substance. That's all it was. Spider-Man touched this black substance, and whatever he thought it became, which we all know represents melanin. And, you know, and everybody should break down, be able to break down Batman, the last one. And I was telling the children about that because they had it all wrong. Root for the cops. Like, nah, you were supposed to root for Bane. I'm just supposed to root for Bane. Like, that scene
right.
on Central Park Ave, I told my mother, you know how many times I walked past 72nd Street? And I said, and that's exactly how them crackers are. And I've always thought, like, yo, man, just give me an AK. I'm running up this joint snapping all these crackers out these buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, so they just had us, gave us a slant to make us think, oh, the cops, hey, them cops in New York ain't beating nobody. If they let every nigga out of jail, they them cops in New York is turning tail and running. But we were taught to look at Batman like, oh. And it's like, nah, Bane was actually the savior. Bane was the one that was coming to free the people from the nonsense. Even if he had to break your arm to reset it right, that's what he was about. So it's like our children, I really feel strongly that a lot of these messages that we all speak should be going to the children. I think we kind of talk to each other too much as adults. You know what I'm saying? And it's just
right.
a humble opinion of mine. But I think the children are the ones because they're open to hear it. They need to because, and I see it. I don't know how many of you work with children. But when I work with them, I watch these parents lock their children in the same prison that they've been in. So if I feel a certain way about the word nigga, and I've explained to, I've sat with cats, and like, yo, it's obviously a vibration. Like, how did me and Aleem and a bunch of other people that we never even met, we all decided that at one point in the 80s that nigga was no longer going to mean ignorant, and you was no, and crackers was no longer be able to use it. I didn't know these brothers in Texas. I didn't know the brothers in L.A., but we all came to the same thing at the same time.
That's right.
There's got to be a vibration behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, remember,
but
they have the 100 monkey theory in which that if one monkey does something different, then all of a sudden it spreads throughout the whole, you know what I'm saying, diaspora.
Yes.
And so now
yes.
all the monkeys do the exact same thing. It's called collective consciousness.
Yes, collective consciousness.
Right, so we downloaded those principles from the Akashic Records, which is the Universal Library, in the 80s in order to try to put the pieces of the puzzle back together, get about our existence and who we actually were. So
yeah.
it's no coincidence that in 1987 there was a harmonic conversion, which was which was dealing with alignment of certain planets, and which that brought this energy in. And New Agers talk about this all the time, but they don't say that it started with us.
Yeah, I used to say that was to me until I looked at the Ethiopian calendar, and I think according to the Ethiopian calendar, today's May is like May 6, 2005 or something like that. But I used to always say that to me, if you talk about what 2012, quote unquote, represented, I used to say that happened back in the 80s, back in between the 80s and the early 90s. Because at one point, you know, I remember my best friend, I said he was German. And when that whole, when hip hop really started, that vibration used to hit us as brown people, he was sitting in the room with me and my boys. And literally, when we walk out, he'd be like, what were you guys talking about? And I would have to break down to him what we were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And no, and it was like, you know, we all remember how it was, and we had our own language, had our own everything, but
it's because you was talking about death, fresh, yo.
Yeah. to the crib, whatever, whatever. I told my kids, like, yo, I got detention for speaking that in class. I called my man homeboy. My kids were like, that's not, what are you talking about after school? And I'm like, wait, she was like, use it in this, because she got mad because she told me to use homeboy in a sentence. And I said, okay. Me and my homeboy are going to go hang out at the crib later on.
Right.
And she was offended, like, what?
Uh-huh.
How dare you? So I used to say that
some ebonic shit.
Yeah.
Ebonics.
But it ain't ebonics no more. That's why I wanted an apology. I wanted an apology